This is Audible.
The Wedding Song, Four Weddings and a Fiasco, Book 3. Written by Lucy Kevin. Narrated by Eva Kaminsky. Chapter 1. The reception for the wedding at the Rose Chalet was in full swing, but Whitney Banning wasn't dancing yet. For the moment, she was leaving the dancing to Aunt Marge, who was whirling around the floor with her new husband. Her aunt looked especially beautiful, and Whitney hoped Marge would finally find the happiness she deserved with her third husband in as many years. Besides, Whitney thought, as she looked down at the blue taffeta bridesmaid's dress she was wearing, she really didn't think a fourth Gone with the Wind-themed wedding was a good idea. If for no other reason than the fact that no one, absolutely, positively no one, looked good in blue taffeta. The music stopped, and Marge caught her eye, then made her way over to where Whitney was standing. "Are you enjoying yourself?" Whitney hugged her aunt. "Of course I am. I'm just sorry Kenneth couldn't be here." Her fiancé had been in Hong Kong for the past couple of weeks on business, and would likely be away for another dozen weeks at least. "A text was waiting for me this morning, asking me to tell you congratulations on his behalf. I'll look forward to the four of us raising a toast together when he returns home," Marge said with a smile. She put her arms around her niece. "I'm so glad you could be here today, honey." The business of managing the Banning Empire had kept her away from Marge's first two weddings. Whitney had been determined to make it this time, though. She wasn't about to miss her aunt's wedding three times running, even with bridesmaids' dresses like this one. Marge glanced over to where another of the bridesmaids was dancing, her artfully braided hair flying free as she did so. "Annette seems to be having a good time." "Annette always does," Whitney said, her affectionate smile laced with mild exasperation. Her cousin looked enough like her that they could have been sisters, but that was where their similarities ended. Somehow, Annette always managed to dodge the business duties that kept Whitney so busy. "You always were the sensible one," Marge said. "Just don't be too sensible today. In this dress?" Her aunt smiled at that. "It's a very lovely dress, and I'm sure half the men in the room would agree if you weren't already engaged to Kenneth. Speaking of men, I've found someone absolutely perfect for Annette. Or maybe Georgia. You know how they feel about your attempts at matchmaking," Whitney reminded her aunt. "I think you're just looking for an excuse for another wedding." Marge laughed. "Am I that transparent?" "Yes," Whitney said, but she was laughing as she said it. "Today has been wonderful," Marge said, as she tucked her arm into Whitney's. "Just think, in 4 months, it will be you walking down the aisle with Kenneth. Your wedding is going to be so lovely." Every time someone mentioned her upcoming wedding, Whitney was taken by surprise. Even in the middle of Marge's wedding, it had been hard to picture herself standing in front of friends and family with Kenneth, waiting to be pronounced husband and wife. Pushing away a twinge of uncertainty at the hard-to-form vision, Whitney followed her aunt's gaze over to the string quartet that had just finished playing the score of Gone with the Wind. A tall, broad-shouldered man shook their hands as they put down their instruments. Then he walked over to a laptop at a corner of the stage. He hit a few keys, starting up a pulsing beat clearly intended to move the party into a higher gear. Half hidden from view, Whitney caught a few glimpses of spiky dark hair and a tattoo curling just below the man's rolled-up sleeves. "Excuse me for a minute," Marge said as she headed toward the stage. A strange buzzing moved up Whitney's spine. There was something familiar about the Rose Chalet's music director. She took a few steps to the side to try to get a better look at him, but Annette blocked her view as she danced over, hips swaying in time to the beat. Now this is more like it. Come on, Whit, let's dance. Annette gestured to the other wedding guests. There are lots of good-looking men here you could grab for a song or two.
I have Kenneth, Whitney pointed out patiently.
There wasn't any point in being offended by Annette's suggestion. That shouldn't stop you from dancing. Annette looked over at the stage where Marge was talking animatedly with the music director. Aunt Marge has taste. I wonder if she's planning to bring him over for an introduction.
Probably. She said something about having found the perfect guy for...
Whitney's words dried up on her tongue as her aunt moved aside enough for her to get a clear view of the man's face. Oh, God. It couldn't be him. It just couldn't.
She was talking about what? Annette demanded.
But all Whitney could do was blink and stare, then blink and stare some more. Come on, Whit. You aren't thinking about something boring like business, are you? You should be telling me more about gorgeous guys. No, she wasn't thinking about business at all, actually. Instead, she was completely fixated on the most gorgeous guy she'd ever seen. The most gorgeous man she'd ever kissed. Tice Smith was every bit as good-looking as he'd been the last time she'd seen him. More so, if anything. Women were actually turning to stare at him, open-mouthed, as he walked across the room with Aunt Marge. Straight toward her. She hadn't seen him at the ceremony, likely because he was busy setting everything up for the reception. If only she'd arrived here early enough to check in on things in the reception hall, she might have caught a glimpse of him and figured out an exit strategy before now. Her heart pounding in time to the driving beat of the music, she said, "Annette, I need to leave. Can you tell Marge that I'm sorry, but..." "Oh, no," Annette said, with a shake of her head, as she put her arm around Whitney's shoulders and held her in place. "This is Marge's big day." "Well," she amended, "it's her third big day, and I am absolutely not going to let you run out of the party just to go work on some boring presentation." Whitney was surprised by the firm set of her cousin's chin as she said, "And I'm definitely not covering for you if you do." Shooting a panicked glance toward Marge and her companion, Whitney worked to slide herself free of her cousin's grip. "What about all the times I've covered for you?" Annette looked uncharacteristically serious. "Not going to happen. You weren't here for the last two weddings, and look what happened." Whitney stood there speechless. "You are not trying to pin Marge's two divorces on me, are you?" Annette shrugged. "All I know is, you weren't there, and I've ended up having to wear this ugly dress three times. For all we know, you might be the good luck charm she was missing at the first two weddings." Her cousin thought Whitney was good luck? On the contrary, she had the worst luck of anyone in the room. Feeling her heart pound and her palms grow sweaty, she still couldn't believe she was finally coming face to face with the man who had haunted her dreams for so long. Not to mention the fact that the timing was utterly, completely rotten. Maybe if they had met each other again 2 or 3 years ago, it wouldn't be such a disaster. But she was engaged to be married in 4 months. Here, at the Rose Chalet, where Tice worked. As she watched him move closer with her aunt's arm tucked into his side, Whitney wondered how it was that after planning 3 weddings at the chalet, her aunt hadn't mentioned him once. Whitney knew she should be poised for flight, to tear free from Annette's grip and make a run for the door. The problem was she couldn't take her eyes off his muscular body and square jaw, and she couldn't get her feet to move either. How could she leave now, when she'd longed for this moment, for the chance to see Tice one more time, to touch his hand, to stare into his beautiful eyes, for so long? To give it up would tear her in two. A moment later, Tice was stepping around Annette,
and Whitney was finally able to look up at him. As she drank in the depths of his dark eyes, the strength of his beautifully masculine features, he sent so many different feelings spinning around inside her. Excitement, fear, and pure sensual attraction. Now, I'm afraid Whitney is strictly off-limits, Tice, as she's getting married here herself just 4 months from now, Marge said with an affectionate smile. The Banning business empire would fall apart without her, she added. For a second or two, it was hard to think of anything to say at all, as her heart leaped even faster in her chest and her breathing quickened. It was little comfort knowing that Tice seemed to have the same problem. He stood there staring as if he couldn't believe it was actually her. Whitney recovered first, but then she'd had a few extra minutes to process her shock at seeing him again. Hello, Tice.
Hello, Whitney.
There was so much layered into the way they were looking at each other, and the four words they'd said to one another, that Whitney was amazed her aunt couldn't see or hear it. Tice reached out a hand for her.
Would you like to dance?
Whitney's heart skipped a beat at how beautiful his smile still was, and how familiar it was, even after so many years. She knew she ought to say no, that she should leave the past in the past where it belonged. Yet now that she was faced with all the emotions, hopes, and dreams that welled up at seeing Tice again, Whitney didn't have even the slightest chance of doing anything but putting her hand into his and saying, I'd love to. Chapter 2 Electricity jumped along Whitney's skin as his strong fingers curled around hers as he led her onto the dance floor. You shouldn't have asked me to dance, Tice. He gazed down at her, so exquisitely handsome, so real, so there, that Whitney felt her stomach flipping over just looking at him. He had such a magnetic presence. Slow dancing with her, he was as attention-grabbing as a rock star walking on stage in a stadium.
Are you telling me that you don't want to dance?
Unable to lie, Whitney said, You should have picked one of my cousins to dance with instead. Annette would have loved it.
I don't want to dance with them, Whitney. You're the only one I want to hold.
Oh, God. He shouldn't be saying that. Not now. Not when she had a fiancé. She should have been pushing out of his arms and walking away, but it was simply impossible. With his arms wrapped around her as they danced to a slow song, she couldn't help but breathe in his scent, masculine and clean. All these years she'd remembered that scent, the memory of it coming back to her on the edge of her dreams far too often.
You're beautiful, he murmured against her hair. So beautiful, I can hardly believe you're here. Finally, with me again.
Every cell in her body, and her heart, responded to his sweet words. Other men had told her she was beautiful, but it had never mattered this much. And that was just the problem. Tice mattered too much, even after just 60 seconds in his arms. Another 60 and she'd be forgetting everything. Her family, her job, her fiancé, and the future she already had planned. A future that didn't include Tice. Stealing her voice to be crisp, she said, We can't do this, Tice. Things have changed since the last time we saw each other. It's been a long time.
Trust me, he replied softly. I know exactly how long it's been.
He pulled her a little closer, and her body betrayed her by melting against his strong, hard muscles.
It's been much, much too long.
5 years. 5 years since they'd last been this close to one another. 5 years since she'd felt the heat of his skin touching hers, the strength of his arms around her. 5 years from the one night they'd spent together in San Francisco. And yet, as Tice led their dance, his arms strong and gentle all at once, Whitney could still remember every moment of it as if it had been yesterday. 5 years ago.
Whitney, Annette said, tugging at her arm. Come on, the headliner will be on in a minute.
I just need some air, Whitney said. I won't be long.
Annette paused, obviously caught between wanting to get back inside the club and feeling that she should stick with her cousin. But when Whitney waved her away and said, Don't worry, I'll come back inside soon, it was all the encouragement Annette needed to plunge back into the crowd of people in the club. Whitney pushed out of the fire door at the side of the club and stepped into an alley, illuminated with lights strung between the brick walls. The barest hint of fog was coming in from San Francisco Bay, and Whitney slipped her arms into her coat as the catchy melody of the last song performed by the opening act, a band called T5, ran on repeat in her head. Neither she nor Annette had heard of T5, and her cousin had initially suggested they get to the club late to just catch the headliner. But considering this was Whitney's last big night out before having to formally take over her father's responsibilities in the family business, she had insisted on coming early so that she wouldn't miss out on even a minute of freedom. She was more than glad that she'd heard the opener play. T5 had been electric. More to the point, the singer had been incredible. He was gorgeous. But she'd been struck by more than just his good looks. He'd sung with such passion, such conviction. On the rock numbers, he'd totally taken over the stage. On the slower ballads, it had been as if he'd been singing just for her. She smiled at that fanciful thought, sure that every girl in the room had felt the same way. Suddenly, Whitney heard a whimper from behind some garbage cans a little further up the alley. She'd once planned to go to veterinary college and had majored in animal science at the University of California, Davis, so she knew how to work with animals. She hoped this one wasn't too hurt or too scared to let her close. She stepped around the garbage cans and found the dog. Its fur was matted in a way that made it clear it had been outside for a while, and she guessed it was part terrier. It wasn't wearing a collar, and when it trembled and backed away from Whitney, she could see that it was limping to try to keep weight off its left front paw.
Oh, you poor thing, Whitney said.
The dog looked up at her and then yipped. Fortunately, it wasn't growling, which meant she might be able to assess the injuries.
I hope you'll let me help you.
The poor little dog was obviously hurt, not to mention starving and filthy.
I just need to find something to bandage your paw with, and then we'll find you something to eat.
The dog's ears perked up a bit, as if it understood exactly what she'd just said.
Do you need help with something?
Whitney immediately knew who had joined them. After all, she'd just spent the past hour listening to that marvelous low voice. Turning to look over her shoulder, she watched the lead singer of T5 move closer to her. She couldn't help but be struck by the fact that he looked even better now than he had out on the stage.
Hi, I'm Tice. I was in the band that just played.
I'm Whitney.
And who's this?
Tice asked, concern darkening his eyes as he looked down at the ragged little dog.
I found him in the alley, Whitney told him. He's obviously astray, and he's hurt his paw. I was just going to head inside to see if the club has a first aid kit.
I'll do it. He obviously feels safe with you, so you should stay with him.
Tice wasn't just gorgeous. He was sweet, too, she thought, as he headed back inside the club. Less than 5 minutes later, he came back with a bowl of water in one hand and what looked like broken-up hamburger in the other. He also had a roll of bandages tucked into his belt. He slowly went down on one knee in front of the little dog, and held out bits of meat on a flat hand. The scruffy-looking mutt sniffed at them for a second or two, then flinched and started shaking. Whitney's heart broke in two as she wondered what had happened to the dog before she'd found it.
"It's okay," she said softly, hoping he'd understand her. "Nothing bad is going to happen to you again, I promise." She took the meat from Tice and held it out in her palm. This time, the dog cautiously ate the food. When he had eaten it all and had lapped up some of the water, she gently put her hand on top of the dog's head and stroked it. At first, the terrier shook at her touch. "Didn't I promise you I wasn't going to hurt you?" she whispered to him. "I'm simply going to bandage up your paw now." She could feel Tice's eyes on her, and despite the cool air, she felt warm all over. Maybe he thought she was strange for talking to the dog, but she'd always had such a strong connection with animals. The perfect assistant, Tice passed the bandages to Whitney. She lifted the little dog's paw, wrapping it as carefully as she could. He cringed again, but didn't pull his paw away. "Good boy," she murmured, as he stilled to let her wind the bandage slowly around his leg. When Whitney was done, she looked up into Tice's eyes, and her breath caught in her throat at the way he was gazing at her.
"You knew exactly what you were doing, didn't you? He really trusted you."
"I took a few animal science classes at UC Davis, but it's not like I'm a vet or anything." Feeling suddenly shy at his compliment, she changed the subject by saying, "Do you know anyone who could take in a very sweet little dog? I wish I could take him home with me, but I can't." Her new building had a strict no-animal policy. She thought it was a silly rule, but the location had been perfect for getting to the office with a minimum of traffic delays. Besides, with her new responsibilities at work, she wasn't going to have much free time anymore. She couldn't stand the thought of leaving a dog all alone in her apartment while she put in long hours at the office. Tice slowly reached out his arms for the dog. The terrier sniffed his hands for several moments before suddenly leaning into the singer's arms. Tice picked him up.
"Actually, I think I do," he said with a slow grin.
Oh my, weren't they a cute pair? The gorgeous rocker with the mangy mutt tucked under his arm. Still, she had to say, "That's very sweet of you, but a dog needs a stable home, not someone living on the road."
"My life's a lot more stable than you'd think," he informed her with the same sexy grin. "So, how about you let me take you for a drink to celebrate my new dog?" "Or," he said, looking at the terrier who was already snuggling into his strong arms, "perhaps we should go for a walk instead."
Whitney didn't know anything about Tice besides the fact that he was a great singer and had a major soft spot for dogs in need. Well, she thought, as she also grinned, that was enough information to go for a walk, wasn't it? Pushing aside the unwelcome thought that a guy like Tice wouldn't fit into her corporate life at all, she said, "I'd love to go for a walk with you." After she texted Annette to let her know about the change of plans, they headed off. As they walked, Tice ran his hand over his new dog's fur, gently untangling it with his long, strong-looking fingers. "Do you know what you're going to name him?" she asked. Tice stared down at the dog for a moment.
"I think he looks like a Milo."
"That's a perfect name." Whitney reached out, and Milo immediately burrowed his head beneath her palm. "Hello, Milo. You really are adorable, aren't you?"
"Clearly, he feels the same way about you," Tice said. "So, how long until you're officially a vet?"
"I've dreamed of being one since I was just a little girl," she said, then shook her head. "But I'm going to be taking over a new position in my family's business soon. Tomorrow, actually." Tice frowned.
"Will you still be able to pursue your dreams?"
She took a deep breath, working to center herself before saying, "Maybe. One day." Not wanting to ruin what had turned out to be an exceptional evening so far, she said, "Let me guess, your dream is to play packed stadiums while people chant your name?"
"Actually,"
Tice said as he stared out at San Francisco Bay, the water a dark purple.
My dream is a lot simpler than that. I just want to write a perfect song one day, and I want someone to really be moved by it.
They kept talking and walking until Whitney completely forgot about both Annette and the club. It felt as if the night was just beginning. Whitney came back out of her memories in a rush, with Tice still holding her tightly as they danced at the Rose Chalet. When she was in his arms again, it was so easy to feel as if everything was the same as it had been that night 5 years ago. But so much had changed since then. Too much for her to be standing here dancing with Tice. Too much for this moment to ever be more than a brief encounter. She wasn't the same girl she'd been 5 years ago, and her life had changed to the point where the feelings she was having for Tice were horribly inappropriate. "I'm getting married here in 4 months," she reminded Tice. Tice's muscles tensed against hers as she spoke, a tension that was matched by her own. He lifted her hand to look at her engagement ring before saying,
"Tell me about your fiancé. Does he make you laugh? Does he make you happy? And tell me why he isn't here with you tonight. Because if I were your fiancé, I wouldn't want to risk some other guy coming in and stealing you away."
Whitney froze in his arms. She couldn't do this. She shouldn't do this.
Whitney.
Knowing nothing she said tonight could change the past, or change a future that was already set in stone, she did the only thing she could. She turned and fled the dance floor, not stopping until she was completely clear of the Rose Chalet. Chapter 3. Tice Smith couldn't make up his mind whether the worst part of the morning after was getting over having a little too much fun the night before, or helping to clean up the Rose Chalet grounds after a wedding. He packed up his amps before pitching in with the others on cleanup. Everyone was there but Phoebe Davis, who hadn't resurfaced since disappearing with RJ's brother, Patrick Knight, after Marge's wedding. Rose Martin, the chalet's owner, was dressed in jeans and a sweater today, rather than one of her well-tailored suits. RJ, the chalet's handyman gardener, had just started taking apart the reconstruction of Tara, that he'd built for Marge Banning's wedding. Even the chalet's dress designer, Anne Farley, had showed up, which was something of a surprise. Normally, the blonde-haired, blue-eyed designer came and went at hours that only made sense to her. Her wedding gowns were so spectacular that Rose rarely, if ever, complained about her strange work schedule. Tice picked up a wilted rose and pricked himself hard, wincing. He couldn't concentrate on anything but Whitney. She'd been so beautiful yesterday, so perfect, and there had definitely been chemistry between them. For Tice, it had felt as if the intervening 5 years hadn't happened at all. If only she hadn't run out like that. Yet she had, and Tice knew he ought to leave things alone. Not only was Whitney getting married in the fall, she was getting married at the chalet. Rose would kill him if she thought he was trying to steal away one of their brides, and Tice seriously doubted that telling his boss about his amazing night with Whitney 5 years ago would do anything to help. Yes, leaving Whitney alone was the smart thing to do, the right thing to do. So then, if leaving things alone was so smart and right, what explanation was there for the way fate had stepped in, bringing Whitney into his life not once, but twice? And how could he possibly ignore the fact that Whitney had been with him every second since their dance? In his head, in his heart, in his dreams when he'd finally fallen into a restless sleep.
"I've gotta switch out some of this gear at my place," Tice said, hefting his guitar and pedal board. "I won't be long."
Rose frowned. "Is this just a ploy to abandon us in the middle of the hard work?"
"Would I do that?"
Rose raised an eyebrow. "Yes."
"You've still got us," Anne pointed out to Rose. Hasn't she, RJ?
Tice couldn't help but notice the look RJ gave Rose lingered just a little too long.
Yes, his friend said to their boss. You have me.
I won't be long, Tice promised, before he headed over to his van and loaded it with his gear. Last night, after he'd made a pathetic excuse to Marge about Whitney rushing off to take an important call, he'd gone into the kitchen and pulled out his phone to look up Whitney Banning on the internet. What a difference a last name made. Tice had quickly learned that she was vice president of operations for Banning Wellness Corporation, and that she worked downtown in their office complex. He drove through the city, cutting through the traffic to get to her office as quickly as possible. He parked across the street from the tall building and was just heading for the large gold-trimmed glass doors when Whitney stepped out into the sunlight. Even in a charcoal gray business suit, she was beautiful. Beyond beautiful. Her expression was both intelligent and focused as she spoke into her cell phone, gesturing with her hand to make a point to her wireless audience. It was so different from the way she'd talked to Milo in the alley that night they'd met, when she'd been so gentle, so soft. And yet he could still see that gentleness, that softness, in every move of her hands, in the purse of her full lips as she smiled at something her caller said. She had just slipped the phone back into her bag when he got to her.
Whitney.
Tice? He saw a flash of pure joy sparkle in her eyes before she tamped it down. What are you doing here?
You ran off so fast last night, we didn't get much of a chance to talk.
We don't have anything to talk about.
Are you sure about that? Tice asked. After our dance last night, you really don't think there's anything to say? 10 minutes, that's all I'm asking.
For now. Whitney paused, and as he waited for her to make a decision about whether she would allow herself to talk to him, Tice was worried she might shut him down. Completely. Forever. All right, she said at last. 10 minutes. But this is my only chance for a break today, so I'll need to get some food. He hated to see her like this, so tense, so rushed.
This was the job you were starting 5 years ago, wasn't it?
He asked, as they made their way down the street. Yes. Her answer was clipped, but even in that one short word, he could hear the strain in her voice.
What about veterinary school?
Her mouth tightened, her lips pressing against each other for a moment before she said, Maybe one day. But Tice could easily hear the maybe not that was far closer to the truth. Hating the way she seemed to have tossed aside her dreams so casually, he said,
So that's it? You've given up on the life you always wanted for yourself?
I'm helping to run my family's business. I'm making decisions that have an impact on thousands of people's lives. Besides, Whitney shot back, looking him square in the eye. Have you written that perfect song of yours yet? Or are you too busy with your job at the Rose Chalet? When she turned to walk away, he reached for her hand and said,
That's nowhere near 10 minutes.
Whitney looked down at her fingers linked in his, a beautiful flush spreading across her cheeks. You're really going to keep me here for every second of it? Tice worked to get a grip on his emotions, but he couldn't stop himself from saying,
I'll do whatever I have to for one more second with you.
Tice, she said softly, as she slipped her fingers from his. You can't.
Please, just give me 5 more minutes.
She bit her lip as she made her decision. Okay, 5 more. What do you need to talk to me about? Tice had rarely ever felt nervous. Big stages and audiences had never fazed him. But this moment with Whitney was so much harder. And so much more important.
Your wedding.
Her eyes widened, then narrowed. We already talked about that last night. Besides, it doesn't have anything to do with you.
Tell me about the guy you're marrying.
It killed him to ask, but he needed to see if her eyes lit up when she talked about her fiancé. He needed to see if she really loved the guy, or if marrying was just another family duty she felt she needed to fulfill. Kenneth, she said quickly. His name is Kenneth. He's a very nice man, and he's going to be a really great husband. Relief flooded every cell in Tice's body, because she definitely didn't say the guy's name like a woman desperately in love.
You don't really want to marry him, do you?
My God, she exclaimed. How can you even say that? Whitney demanded. You don't know anything about him.
No, but I know you, Whitney.
One night, she reminded him. That's all you and I had together, whereas Kenneth and I have been friends practically forever. We even work together. His chest clenched at the thought of another man kissing her, slipping a ring on her finger, especially a man she didn't love. Whitney deserved real love, not a pleasant marriage to a friend that almost sounded like a business deal.
I've seen a lot of couples get married over the past 5 years, he said softly. I know what real love looks like, and I know when people are getting married for all the wrong reasons.
The wrong reasons? Her expression was somewhere between shock and anger. But she wasn't walking away yet, and he prayed that meant he still had a chance.
It's only 4 months until your wedding, and neither of you has been into the chalet to check it out and plan the big party to kick off your future together. As far as I know, there haven't been any talks about the dress, the food, or the music. When couples are really eager to marry, we have to find ways to slow them down and remain patient until the big day.
You don't know anything about my relationship, she told him in a low voice. For your information, Kenneth has more important things to take care of than wedding details. He isn't exactly going to fly over from China to pick out the color of our napkins or to decide between salmon and chicken. With every angry word, she moved closer to him. One of the hardest things he'd ever had to do was to not reach for her, not pull her against him, not kiss her the way he'd dreamed of kissing her again for so long. He'd known this wouldn't be easy, had known Whitney was too strong to let him convince her so easily to give him a chance. But fate wasn't going to visit them a third time, which meant he had to make this one count.
I'm sure he's a nice guy, because I can't see you ever going out with some loser. But are you really telling me that what you feel for him is as intense as what we both felt that one night?
He paused before laying himself completely bare.
Are you telling me that your feelings for him are anywhere near what the two of us are feeling right now?
Tice. He reached for her then, simply unable to stop himself from touching her face.
Look me in the eye and tell me that you don't feel the same. Tell me that you don't still feel what's between us as intensely as you did that night 5 years ago when you were in my arms. Do that, and I'll go.
On his, and she took a deep, shaky breath as she contemplated her answer. And then, suddenly, she looked past his shoulder. Her eyes went wide as she saw where he'd just taken her. The Happy Pig hot dog stand, she exclaimed. I haven't been here in years, not since. She blinked up at him, and 5 years fell away. 5 years ago, after walking hand in hand for hours. A hot dog stand? Whitney said. Tice, I can't. I'm a vegetarian. Tice smiled, still holding Milo in his arms.
So am I. Luckily, it's a vegetarian hot dog stand.
There are vegetarian hot dog stands?
There sure are, he said, gesturing to the Happy Pig.
Even late at night, there was a line. But then, the place did make the best hot dogs in the city, vegetarian or not. So, which one should I have? Whitney asked him. Tice cocked his head to the side.
Let's ask Milo here.
You're serious?
Why not?
Tice asked. I've never met a guy who will actually talk to his animals. I mean, I used to talk to my family's cat all the time, but most people don't get that. Tice smiled and then stroked Milo's head.
Ah, well, Milo here says you can't trust anything a cat has to say.
That got a laugh from her, but it wasn't just laughter that Tice wanted right then. He looked down at the small dog in his arms.
What's that, Milo?
He said.
You think I should do what? Yes, I think you're right.
What did he say? Whitney asked. Tice answered her by leaning in, with Milo pressed between them and kissing her. It was a soft kiss, a tender kiss. He kept kissing her while she stood there in shock, and then, when she finally kissed him back, with a passion to match his, he kissed her some more, not stopping until the guy running the hot dog stand coughed pointedly and asked if they were going to order anything now that he'd served everyone in front of them. They fell back from one another, laughing. Tice could see that Whitney remembered the incredible kiss they'd shared standing in front of the Happy Pig hot dog stand just as well as he did. Her half-closed eyes and the faint smile that worked its way across her lips were dead giveaways. He leaned in toward her, just a little, and for a second, Whitney leaned in too. Tice could practically feel the space between them shrinking, and knew that any moment, their lips would meet. Suddenly, Whitney's eyes opened wide, and she took a step back from him. "No, I can't. I can't, Tice."
"Are you telling me that you don't want this?"
Whitney hesitated just a fraction of a second too long before saying, "All we shared was one night. That's all it was."
"Whitney."
She looked at the Happy Pig hot dog stand, and even though he could see how much she wanted to eat one of their hot dogs, and how much she wanted to kiss him, too, she shook her head. "Your 10 minutes are up," she told him. And then she turned and walked away. Chapter 4 Returning to the Rose Chalet as promised, Tice found the main room still needed a lot of cleanup work. There were tables to be put away, his cables still needed to be wound up, and most of the flowers were still in place.
RJ called out, "Hey, Tice, can you give me a hand?"
Knowing hard physical work was exactly what he needed right now to burn off some steam, Tice grabbed tools from the toolbox and set to work ripping apart Tara.
"Whoa, take it easy," RJ said, as Tice yanked off a large section. "We might need to put it back together someday." "Nope," Tice said. "I think Marge is actually going to stay married to this husband, which means we've seen the last of Tara."
From what he'd learned today, the Banning women were better at sticking with their men than he'd given them credit for.
"Well," RJ said, "someone else might want it. That niece of hers, maybe."
Tice gripped the hammer even harder as he slammed into a beam. If he'd been at home, he would have turned his amplifier up as far as it could go, added plenty of distortion, and played hard rock until his neighbors complained. Heavy manual labor was a good substitute, though. He and RJ made a good team, especially when RJ got into the spirit of things and attacked the wood just as much as Tice did. By the time they were done, they had both worked up a sweat. RJ nodded to him.
"Thanks."
Tice should be the one thanking his friend. There was something profoundly satisfying about being able to look at something he'd done with his own hands, even if it was a demolition job.
"Tice, there you are."
He turned to see Rose standing there watching them.
"Would you look at the two of you?" she said with a smile that made it clear she was trying not to laugh.
"Sweaty and covered in wood shavings. I don't know whether I should be keeping customers away or charging them an entry fee." Tice caught the way her eyes flicked to RJ again, and she flushed before saying,
"This feels like the end of an era. I don't think we'll be getting another Gone with the Wind wedding for a while."
We're all hoping Marge won't be back, aren't we? RJ said. I always wanted the chalet to be about love working out, Rose agreed. It looks like Marge has finally gotten her happily ever after. It was obvious to Tice that they were all glad Marge had finally found someone who made her happy. Now, if only her niece didn't do so many crazy things to his feelings. And if only Whitney would let him make her happy.
Did you need me for something?
Tice asked Rose. I've been running a client through the last few things for his big day, and he has a special request for you. It would be great if you could come and meet with him for a few minutes to discuss the situation.
Let me just clean up a bit and put my shirt back on.
A handful of minutes later, Rose introduced them. Tice, this is Hugh Washburn. The middle-aged man had a pleasant, open face. He and his fiancée Teresa will be getting married here a couple of weeks from now. When they came in a few months before to meet with the rest of the group, you were away for the day. After they shook hands, Tice said,
Rose said that you had a special request. Is it about a particular song?
I've decided I'd like something special for Teresa as a surprise at the wedding. It's why I came without her today. We've both always loved music, so I was hoping that you might be able to write a song in her honor for the occasion. Tice couldn't believe the day he was having. First, Whitney had walked away from him, yet again, and now he was being asked to write a song. A love song. Fighting back the no that threatened to jump off his tongue, he diplomatically said,
I could certainly do a new arrangement of an existing song by changing the lyrics.
The client frowned, looking over at Rose.
I thought you said that we'd be able to choose whatever custom elements we wanted for the day.
Of course you can, Rose said. Tice, Mr. Washburn would like you to write an original song for his bride.
I understand that, Tice said,
knowing he had to spin this carefully.
I'm just thinking about the end result. With a reworking, you're absolutely sure of what you're getting ahead of time, especially if you pick a song that you know your fiancé already loves. That way, it will have her at the heart of it.
So you're saying that a rearrangement offers the best chance of a good result?
Yes, he said.
He shot his most reassuring smile the client's way.
You will still be making an incredibly personal gesture, and Teresa will still be a part of the song, but you will also be showing her just how well you know her musical tastes by picking out the song that she loves most in the world. When you think about it like that, it's actually almost more romantic.
He hoped that last bit wasn't overkill, as Rose shot daggers at him with her eyes.
Yes, I guess so, Mr. Washburn said, sounding a little more convinced. And there aren't many other places that would be able to arrange swans at the wedding. Well, I think we've covered everything else, and I'll be back with Teresa to work out the final details on her dress. I'll email you soon with the song choice.
Wonderful, Rose said, shaking Mr. Washburn's hand before showing him out. Tice started to head back to the main hall to help RJ finish up, but Rose caught up with him halfway there.
Tice, you're about to ask me if I'll reconsider writing this song, aren't you?
You can see the client isn't happy about it, and we didn't build the Rose Chalet's reputation by giving customers almost what they wanted.
I know, Tice said, but he seemed happy enough by the time he left.
Maybe, she admitted, but I don't understand why you won't at least try to write a song. He really liked Rose, felt that she was more of a friend than just a boss. Still, he couldn't help a flash of annoyance at her comment.
If Anne told you what she thought was the best way to go about a dress design, or Phoebe explained that she had a better idea for a floral display, you'd accept it, wouldn't you?
Yes, I would. But I'd want to know they'd given it their best shot first, that they weren't just settling for second best.
I am giving it my best shot.
Easy, Tice, Rose said in a gentle voice. I was just hoping that whatever's stopping you from doing this, it might be something we can talk through. He felt his shoulders slump, the weight of the bad day, and the sleepless night, dragging him down.
It's been a long time since I've written a song.
5 years. Rose looked as if she was waiting for him to say more, and he was afraid she might press him further. Instead, she simply said, "Please promise me you'll at least try." Tice nodded reluctantly.
"I'll let you know if I can make it work. Otherwise, assume we'll be reworking her favorite song."
"Thank you, Tice." Rose gave him a small smile and put her hand on his arm. "You know, I've always trusted you to do your best by our clients. I still do." With that, she turned and headed to her office. With her vote of confidence ringing through his head, Tice went out to the parking lot and dug his guitar out of the trunk where he'd left it. He sat on the hood of his car, guitar in hand, because he knew as well as anyone that the way to get inspiration to show up was to just start playing. The longer he tried to build up to it, the harder it would be. He tried strumming his way through a simple 3-chord progression to see if any inspiration would bite. Nothing. Not so much as a glimmer of a lyric. He tried running through a few riffs instead, but they were tired old standbys. There wasn't the faintest hint of anything original coming through. Then again, had he really expected anything else? He hadn't written anything original since that night with Whitney 5 years ago. He'd started to write a song the morning after, but he'd broken it off after the 4-bar introduction, because there hadn't seemed to be any point. He could still play those 4 bars without thinking about them, and as he finger-picked, the notes rang out. He repeated the 4 bars a few times, but he just didn't know what came next. Not without Whitney. 5 years ago, just moments after their first kiss. Tice hadn't been looking for love, or for a partner, or for a woman to share the rest of his life with. He was a young musician with the world at his feet. It was all waiting to be explored, waiting to be conquered. But what he and Whitney had just shared had been every symphony, every ballad, every single one of his favorite songs, all wrapped up into one sweet, perfect kiss. He and Whitney would do that conquering, that exploring, together. He didn't know how he knew it, only that after a few hours with her, every piece of his heart and every part of his soul knew it to be true. They took their vegetarian hot dogs and walked to a bench that looked out over the bay. For the first time since they'd met, they didn't speak. As they enjoyed their meal, with Milo sleeping at their feet, the silence was a perfect one. The first rays of light were beginning to rise up through the darkness, casting an incredible glow over the water, but Tice could barely take his eyes off Whitney's beautiful face. Their hot dogs and sodas long finished, she turned to smile at him. "Do I have mustard on my face?" She didn't, but it was more fun to pretend that she did, as he gently ran a finger along the corner of her mouth.
"Right here."
Whitney reached up for his hand and held it against her cheek. "Tice, I..." Her cell phone rang loudly, jarring both of them. Her hand slid from his. "Sorry, it must be Annette making sure I'm okay. I should get this." But when she pulled the phone out of her pocket, he could see the word "Dad" on the screen, along with a picture of a nice-looking middle-aged man. She frowned and put it up to her ear. "Dad, is everything okay?" The early morning was quiet enough that Tice was able to hear the other side of the conversation, even though he didn't want to eavesdrop.
"I'm fine, honey. Just calling to wish you luck before your first day in my..."
Her father broke off with a laugh.
"Well, it's your office now, isn't it?"
Tice could feel Whitney tense up beside him,
one muscle at a time.
She'd been so relaxed, had looked so happy over the past few hours as they'd walked and talked and kissed. But now her mouth was pinched, and her eyes were shadowed as she said, "Thanks, Dad. It's going to be..." She couldn't seem to find the word for a moment. "Great. Don't worry about anything at the company. I'll make you proud, I promise."
"Your mother and I are already so proud of you. We never expected you to want to take over my position. It's the best gift you could give us, honey."
She swallowed hard. "I love you, Dad."
"We love you, too. Be sure to call to let us know how your first day goes, or if you have any questions about anything at all."
As she put the phone down on her lap, Tice was struck by the sense that in one short phone call, he'd lost the woman he'd just found. Her previously vibrant energy was muted now, as if the fog had moved from covering the bay to enveloping her instead. "I need to go get ready for work." No, he didn't want her to go, especially not like this, not when it felt as though the bond they'd created was threatening to snap apart.
"It's early still," he said, as he reached for her hand. "Stay a little while longer."
But instead of linking her fingers with his, the way they'd been for so much of the night, she brought her hand in closer to her body. "Tonight has been..." She looked at him, and everything she felt was in her eyes. The passion, the longing, and the sudden sadness. "It's been amazing, Tice. And I'm so glad we met, but..." He didn't think. He just put his hands in her hair and kissed her again. He would do anything he needed if it would keep her from listing all the reasons why they couldn't be together. After a split second of surprise, she kissed him back just as passionately. And yet, when they finally pulled apart, she looked sadder than ever. "You're wonderful," she told him. "But I can't be in a relationship right now."
"Why not?"
"I owe it to my family to give 100% of myself to the business. This was my last night out before taking over for my father. I can't let him down. Thank you for making it more special than I could have ever hoped it would be." Didn't she hear herself? The way she made it sound as if she was walking into a prison cell, locking the door behind her and tossing the key out of reach.
"It doesn't have to just be one night, Whitney."
He could see she didn't like the way he was pushing her, but how could he let her go?
"At least give me your number."
He held his breath. She pressed her lips together and looked away from him. Finally, she gave him the numbers he so desperately wanted. She reached for his hand. "You're amazing, Tice. I can't wait to hear your songs on the radio." It sounded as if she was saying goodbye. But when she leaned over to press one more soft kiss to his lips, he lost track of everything but her scent, the taste of her, the sweet pleasure of knowing he'd found the woman of his dreams. When she suddenly stood and quickly walked away, he knew she didn't want him to follow her. She obviously needed to focus on her job today, and he would let her do that, because he respected her. But she also needed to know that he wasn't giving up, and that he would be waiting for her when she was ready to date him. Pulling his phone out of his pocket, he dialed her number, surprised when she didn't pick up and her voicemail came on. But it wasn't Whitney's voice speaking in his ear. "Hello. You've reached the San Francisco SPCA. Our business hours are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Saturday." He woke Milo as he jumped up off the bench and scanned the bayfront for Whitney. But she was gone. That was when he saw it, the sticker on the side of the bench where they'd been sitting, with the SPCA logo and phone number. She'd left him with no last name, no phone number, and no way to find her. For the past 5 years, Tice hadn't been able to write anything worth listening to. He'd tried putting a few things together, and they'd come out by the numbers, so awful that he hadn't even bothered letting the rest of his band hear them. Worse, without that buzz of writing new songs and hearing people respond to them, everything else about life in the band had seemed pointless. Other T5 members had written a few things, and they'd played the old songs, but getting up on stage hadn't been the same. So he'd quit before his friends could throw him out for doing such a half-hearted job as lead singer. Now he noodled aimlessly up and down the guitar neck as he thought about the way the Rose Chalet job had come along right after he'd left the band. Since then, Tice occasionally filled in with other bands. The combination was a good one, giving him a regular paycheck along with a few moments up on stage every now and again. What more did he need? Tice hit the guitar strings hard, discord ringing out. The Rose Chalet was fine, but he wasn't kidding anyone, not even himself. He needed more, so much more. He needed his creative soul to be fulfilled, and he needed his heart to be made whole. Whitney had been right. She might have settled for second best by going into the family business, but he'd done exactly the same. He'd settled for a nice, easy, comfortable job, rather than putting himself out there to go after his dream. Tice loved the friends he had at the Rose Chalet. He loved being able to make a living with music. But it wasn't the same as writing the perfect song. And it never would be. Chapter 5. "I can't believe he'd accuse me of not following my dreams," Whitney said as she got ready for work. On the bed behind her, Clementine, a black and white tabby cat, stretched out and yawned. "I know," Whitney said as she put on her suit jacket. "I shouldn't be making such a big deal about what he said. It's just, how can he say that about me when he's hiding away at a wedding venue?" Clementine sat up, staring at Whitney until she stroked the cat's ears. "Okay, so maybe I wanted to be a veterinarian when I was a kid, but what does that have to do with my life now?" Her cat mewed in response. "If I left the business, who would take over? Annette?" Whitney laughed at that thought, but there was little humor in it. "Come on, let's get you some breakfast before I go." Clementine leapt down off the bed, brushing against Whitney's legs as they headed to the kitchen. One day, she'd managed to get to work without being covered in cat hairs. "You'd probably like it if my cousin were in charge. You always ignore me when she's in the house." That was just how cats were. The person who gave them food and disposed of the dead mice they brought in was never as much fun as the person who made a total fuss over them. On top of that, Clementine recognized a kindred free spirit when she saw one. After all, wasn't it true that cats did exactly what they liked, slept through about half the day, and expected you to put up with them simply because they happened to be gorgeous? Clementine and Annette were a perfect match. Not that Whitney wanted Clementine any other way. Annette either, for that matter. Clementine finished her breakfast, then followed Whitney around as she hunted for her keys. She'd hated that first apartment 5 years ago, where she hadn't been able to have a pet, and as soon as the lease had run out, she'd found this cute little place just outside the city, but close enough to the office that she could justify the short commute. There was a small kitchen, a cozy living room, a master bedroom, and a home office. She paused in the middle of the living room and looked around at the small space. "I guess when Kenneth and I get married, we'll have to look for a bigger place, won't we?" Funny, she and Kenneth had never discussed where they'd live after the wedding. They obviously needed to talk about their plans for the future, and whether they'd move into one of their homes or get a different one altogether. But she didn't need to talk to him to know they needed a new wedding venue. Clementine raised a paw and started to lick it, but her eyes were on her owner. "Don't look at me like that. You know I can't have the wedding at the Rose Chalet. Not with Tice there. It wouldn't be fair to Kenneth.
And she was going to be fair to Kenneth, regardless of what it took. After all, he was the man she was going to marry. Kenneth was the perfect choice in so many ways. They'd known each other forever. They'd been friends at school. He was good-looking and funny, and they'd worked together in the business for years. After a couple of years of dating, everyone had assumed they would get married. One day, they had ended up at a jewelry store, and she'd walked out with a diamond on her left hand. Come to think of it, had he ever officially proposed? Surely that was something she should be able to remember instantly. But she was tired. And more than a little shaken up from seeing Tice again. In any case, if keeping everything on course meant changing the wedding venue, then that was what Whitney was going to do. She called her secretary, leaving a message to say that she was going to be coming in a little late. On the way to the chalet, she stopped at the Last Bean, her favorite coffee shop. The morning never really started for her until she'd had her first cup of their coffee. She'd bought their beans to grind at home, but it never tasted quite right when she made it for herself. "Hi, Janet," Whitney said as she went in. "Could I have the usual, please?" "Sure. One coffee and one morning bun coming up. You're here a little earlier than normal. Big day."
"Just something I have to do before work."
A few minutes later, she was walking through the Rose Chalet's beautiful gardens. Even the small pond was surrounded by delicate flowers.
"I missed you, too."
Whitney hadn't heard Tice approach, but at the sound of his low, mesmerizing voice, she spun to face him. He was standing just a few feet away, wearing jeans and a dark T-shirt. She wanted so badly to put her arms around him again and kiss him. All the more reason to get this over and done with.
"Tice, I don't want another fight.
Or to do something shocking and wrong, like kissing you while I'm engaged to another man."
"I don't want to fight either. But I do want to tell you that you were right."
She stared at him in surprise.
"I was?"
"Yes. I did give up my dreams of writing that perfect song. And I don't have any right to call you out for working in the family business. Not if it's what you think is right."
For a second or two, she simply didn't know what to say.
"Tice, I..."
"You're not actually here to see me, are you?"
He looked so sad, she wanted to reach for him. Tightly gripping her purse in one hand and her coffee cup in the other, she finally said,
"I'm looking for Rose."
Although the truth was much more complicated than that, wasn't it? Because somewhere deep down, despite all her protestations to the contrary, hadn't she been hoping to see Tice one more time?
"Rose has been busy trying to get everything together for a house she's building with her fiancé, and she will be coming in a little late today."
"Maybe I can help," he offered.
"What did you need to talk to her about?"
Oh boy, this was awkward. Canceling on Rose was one thing. Saying the words to Tice was another thing entirely. But she still had to do it, to be fair to Kenneth.
"I need to pull out of the Rose Chalet as a wedding venue."
Hating how shaky her voice was, she took a deep breath before adding, "I can't spend the next 4 months trying to plan the wedding with you around constantly, Tice. I just can't." He moved closer to her.
"You shouldn't be afraid of what you feel."
"I'm getting married."
Her unspoken "to someone else" floated in the air between them.
"Don't change the venue, Whitney."
"What else can I do?"
"It's about what I can do," Tice replied, moving closer still. "I'll tell Rose I can't work this wedding. I'll find you another music director. A great one."
Whitney shook her head.
"I still don't think it's a good idea, Tice."
"You get to keep your dream wedding venue, and the others don't suffer because of me. It's a good solution."
They were so close now that they were almost touching. Whitney looked up into his eyes and could see how important this was to him. She could see a lot more than that, too. His desire for her was so clear. She would have to be blind to miss it. Or maybe it was just the reflection of her own desire for him. It would be so easy to move that last little bit closer. A loud crash rang out from behind them, coupled with the sound of a bird in distress and a male voice swearing. Whitney whipped around to see a swan stuck in the netting around a rose bush, its head caught fast. The huge bird thrashed in terror, perilously close to the rose's thorns. She dropped her bag and coffee cup on the lawn and ran over to the swan. Taking off her jacket, she threw it over the bird, wrapping her arms around it to try to stop it struggling. The bird was so agitated that it might have knocked her down if Tice hadn't been right there beside her, helping her to hold it still.
"What happened, RJ?"
Tice asked the man in the overalls who had come running after the bird. RJ shook his head.
"I don't know. One minute the swan was fine, the next it spooked and took off straight toward the roses."
He pulled a phone out of his pocket.
"If you two can keep it steady for a little while longer, I'll call a vet."
Whitney, fearing that they wouldn't have time for a vet to arrive, immediately went to work on the netting. But as she did, the swan became frenzied, thrashing whenever she got too close to its head. Knowing the poor thing was obviously terrified, she tore the netting around its neck the best she could without getting bitten. Finally, she and Tice were able to at least move the swan away from the rose bush. Amazingly, it didn't seem to be too badly scratched.
"I need a small pair of scissors," Whitney told RJ, after he'd arranged for an emergency visit from a mobile veterinarian. "We've got to cut this netting free before the swan gets so tangled it starts to choke."
The bird was still struggling, but Tice had a good grip on it. Gradually, it seemed to sense that Whitney was trying to help. It had stopped fighting her once RJ returned with the scissors. As delicately as she could, she snipped the netting away. RJ knelt beside them.
"Is it going to be okay?"
"I think so," Whitney said. "I can't see any marks from the netting or any serious scratches. I think this is one very lucky bird. In any case, we'll know more once the vet gets here."
"I've got it now," RJ told Whitney. "Sorry to drag you into an emergency like this. I promise we'll make it up to you by pulling out all the stops with your wedding in a few months' time."
A shiver went down her spine at the thought of walking down the aisle with Kenneth, and from the darkness of Tice's eyes on her as he obviously envisioned the same thing. Whitney excused herself to wash up, and had just finished cleaning up when the vet arrived.
"So, this is the patient," she asked. "I don't see that many swans. You," she pointed to RJ, "stay and hold it. You other two, I'm sure you're worried, but if you could give us a little space?"
Whitney moved back with Tice by her side as they watched the vet carefully check out the bird.
"That was intense."
Her hands were still shaking a bit, but she suspected that was more from exhilaration than anything else.
"It was, but it seemed like you knew exactly what to do," Tice said, "just like you did with Milo."
Tice picked up her bag and handed it to her, before taking the spilled coffee cup and carrying it to a nearby garbage can. When he returned to Whitney's side, she was watching the vet examine the bird with clear, precise movements to ensure it was okay. The woman dabbed disinfectant on the worst of the scratches and slowly extended each of the swan's wings to check for damage. Whitney fought back a fierce longing to be in charge of the bird again. Tice moved up close to her shoulder.
"Are you really going to try to tell me that your family wouldn't want that for you? That they wouldn't see the way your eyes light up when you work with animals?"
Whitney swallowed. The truth was that they loved her and wanted the best for her. And yet, that didn't change the obligation she had to them. It was a relief when her secretary, Olivia, called. Sorry, Whitney, but we need you in the office. There's an emergency. We've just learned the East Coast deal is about to fall through. Just as she'd been about to explain to Tice, her family and their business needed her. I'll be right there. Chapter 6. Tice sat in his apartment, his work guitar across his knees. The apartment wasn't large, but it was enough for him and Milo, with old, comfortable furniture and space to store his recording gear. Milo was in his basket in the corner, half asleep this morning. Tice's other guitar, the road-battered and scarred Telecaster copy he'd put together from parts, sat on a stand in the corner of the room, next to a small table containing both a pile of sheet music and an empty cup of coffee. Compared to the guitar on his lap, the remade Telecaster was an ugly old thing. It had pickups that didn't match, gouges in the wood where he'd rerouted it to take a third pickup, and a bare wood finish. The only reason he didn't sell it was because he doubted anyone would want to buy it. Well, maybe that wasn't the only reason. There were plenty of good memories with it. He'd played it so many nights on the road, in front of so many audiences, it was more like an old friend than anything. He'd been playing it the night he'd met Whitney.
"I'd hoped she would have called me by now," Tice said to Milo.
The dog looked up from his basket, opening his eyes sleepily.
"Yeah, I know she doesn't actually have my number, but she could have looked it up, or come to the Rose Chalet again."
It had been a hectic week at the chalet. The Washburn wedding had gone off without a hitch, fortunately. After letting Rose know he wasn't able to write an original song, he'd managed to get the reworked song together in plenty of time to serenade the bride. The swans had been in good form, and everyone had gone away from the wedding happy. In spite of all the work he'd been doing, he still thought about Whitney. All the time. Especially their almost kiss at the chalet. When Milo whined, Tice put his guitar away and grabbed the leash.
"Come on, let's go out."
Tice was about to drop his half-drunk cup of coffee into the sink when his thoughts flashed back to the cup Whitney had dropped when she moved to rescue the swan.
"I know just the place we can go for our walk," Tice announced. "It's not that far, and you'll probably really like it."
Milo's head tilted to one side, one ear flopping down over an eye.
"I'm pretty sure they'll find a water bowl for you. You know how you love a good water bowl, don't you?"
Milo looked at him, those big brown eyes boring into him. For a dog, his expression was eloquent.
"Things are easier for dogs. Trust me on that."
That just earned him another look, this time with Milo's tongue lolling out.
"When was the last time you ran into a girl you hadn't been able to find for 5 years, only to discover she's planning to marry some other guy who isn't even here treating her right?"
Milo yapped.
"Exactly. Never."
He hooked up Milo's leash.
"Let's go."
Tice led the dog down from his apartment to the street. Milo looked a lot healthier than he had the first night he'd met Whitney, but there was still something fundamentally unkempt about him, no matter how well Tice groomed him. He smiled slightly at that thought, and ran a hand through the unpredictable spikes of his hair. What was it they said about dogs and their owners ending up looking the same? They set off in the direction of the Last Bean. It was the name of the coffee shop that had been on the side of Whitney's coffee cup. Milo hurried along beside him, and it was only when the small dog broke into a jog that Tice realized just how much he was hurrying to get there.
"Sorry, little guy," he said, as Milo gave him a reproachful look. "I don't want to risk missing her."
He slowed down slightly to let Milo keep up, and noticed the way the morning traffic stopped and started all around them as people made their way to their 9-to-5 office jobs. Tice had never planned on having a regular job. He'd always assumed he'd be an artist, a musician and songwriter. Of course, he still got to play music at the Rose Chalet, and the friends he had there were great. But wasn't he still going in every day, knowing exactly what he would be doing for his monthly paycheck? Milo pulled at his leash, and Tice looked up to see Whitney sitting in the sun at one of the coffee shop's outdoor tables. She was dressed for work in another suit, this one a dark navy that set off her coloring beautifully. When Whitney spotted him, she looked uncertain as to whether she should smile at him or not. Fortunately, when the dog ran over to her with an excited bark, she no longer bothered to hold back her grin.
"Oh, sure," Tice said softly. "Steal the show completely."
Whitney stroked Milo's fur while the dog licked her hand excitedly. "It's been a long time since I last saw you, hasn't it, Milo?" The dog barked. "You obviously remember me, though." Tice smiled at that.
"You aren't exactly easy to forget."
"How has he been?" she asked. "I still wish I could have taken him home with me."
"Milo has been great. I always loved knowing that he was my link to you," Tice said honestly.
He sat opposite Whitney,
though from the looks of it, he could have done with seeing more of you.
He paused just for a moment.
"He isn't the only one."
"Is that why you're here?" Tice raised an eyebrow.
"Milo heard that this place had great water bowls. I couldn't keep him away, could I?"
That got a laugh from her. Too soon, she grew serious again. "Tice," she began, "I'm not going to deny that there is definitely something between us. But you can't expect to fit into my life as though nothing has happened in between. I've got a family I love that I need to support and a business to run. I like you," she said softly, "but..." He couldn't let her get to the but. Not if it meant she'd be walking away again.
"I won't push you, Whitney. Not today, I promise. But I'd love it if we could talk. Just talk, that's all we'll do."
Whitney looked momentarily uncomfortable. "Actually, I'm meeting someone here."
"Did Kenneth come back early?"
Tice asked, feeling as if he'd just been kicked in the gut. Before she could reply, a kid in his early teens, with the same dark hair and green eyes as Whitney, headed over to the table. He had the gawky, unfinished look most kids had around that age, but Tice guessed that he was probably one of the kids who got plenty of attention from the girls at his school. He was carrying a guitar case.
"Sorry I'm late," he said.
"Sebastian, I'd like you to meet Tice. Tice, this is my brother." Tice hadn't known she had a brother. Had he been at Marge's wedding? Then again, once he'd spotted Whitney, he really hadn't paid attention to anybody else. Part of him wanted the opportunity to spend more time alone with Whitney. But part of him recognized this as a chance to show Whitney he wasn't a threat to the life she'd built up, and that he could fit in with her family.
"Hi, Sebastian. It's good to meet you."
"You too. Is that your dog?"
"His name is Milo."
The dog quivered with happiness while Sebastian stroked his ears.
"What are you playing?" Tice asked with a nod to the guitar case.
Sebastian opened the case, and the guitar within wasn't bad. In fact, there had been times in his life when Tice would have happily traded most of what he owned to be able to play an instrument that good.
"Whitney bought it for me.
I figured if you were going to play, it should be on a decent guitar."
"You made a good choice," Tice said. "That's a serious instrument."
Sebastian seemed pleased by that.
"Are you planning on becoming a musician professionally?"
The teenager shook his head.
"No way. This is just a hobby for me. Kind of the way Whitney is with animals."
Tice couldn't let that hobby comment go.
"Do you know how I got Milo?"
"Tice," Whitney began. Sebastian looked between the two of them.
"How?" "I found Whitney tending to a stray, hurt dog outside a gig I was playing. It was Milo, and she bandaged him up and got him to trust her. How many people would have done that?
Not many, I guess, Sebastian admitted.
Your sister knew exactly what to do. And last week, a swan at the venue where I play at got caught in garden netting. I would have just waited for the vet, or hurt the bird by approaching it wrong. But thanks to Whitney, we managed to get the swan out of the netting in one piece. She has a real talent with animals, and would be an amazing veterinarian.
Sebastian looked over to where Whitney was petting Milo, her head lowered so no one could see her face.
I guess you're right. I never really saw it that way.
Finally, Whitney looked up at Tice, giving Milo the opportunity to finally visit the water bowl. Tice couldn't quite decipher the look, but there was definitely gratitude in there, along with something that looked like affection she wasn't trying to hide anymore.
Tice was in a band, Whitney suddenly told her brother. That's why he knows about guitars.
Sebastian's eyes went wide.
Were you guys famous?
Tice shook his head. We got close, but never quite made the big time.
Still, he had plenty of stories from the old days to impress a young would-be guitarist. He started with the time his guitarist and his keyboard player had made a bet over who could talk the venue owners into doing the craziest things, segued straight into the story about having to pretend that an entire rock set was meant to be acoustic after all his amps failed, and went on from there to mention a few of the bands they'd shared stages with at festivals.
No way, Sebastian said after a while. You didn't really end up jamming with those guys when they were in town. I mean, that would have been right before the bass player made a run for the border. Trust me, if I'd known then what I know now about the 100-mile-an-hour chase, I would never have accepted a ride home from the guy. They sure could play, though.
Whitney gave her watch a brief glance.
I'm about to be late for work. You're due in class, too, Sebastian.
She stood, ruffling Milo's fur once more.
It was good seeing you again, Milo.
She looked at Tice, her eyes warmer than they'd been in a long time.
You too, Tice.
Yeah, Sebastian said. It was good meeting you.
Brother and sister exited together, leaving Tice with too many things left unsaid. Beside him, Milo whined and lay down.
I don't know what you're complaining about. At least she touched you.
Maybe, Tice thought, as he went back over the past few minutes in his head, he should have pressed Whitney harder before her brother had showed up by telling her flat out how he felt. At the very least, he definitely should just have kissed her. Chapter 7 Whitney's office was at the top of the Banning Building, giving her both plenty of space to work in and an excellent view out over the city. Annette was there, having come into the office for once. Her cousin was on the board of directors, but rarely spent much time on site.
I heard you needed someone to pose for the new catalogs, Annette said.
Whitney made a non-committal sound. She wasn't thinking about her cousin. She was looking out the window at the city, wondering where Tice was. Was he starting his day at the Rose Chalet? And was he thinking of her, too?
What if I did it? Annette asked.
Until this morning, Whitney had been able to pretend that she could keep a lid on things, but it so wasn't true. Right then, it was all she could do to keep from remembering the moment after they'd helped rescue the swan together, when they'd been so close, when they nearly...
Are you listening to me? Annette demanded.
Of course I am, Whitney replied, as she turned away from the window.
It would be good to have you doing more in the business.
I'm not sure about that, Annette said. Most of it's pretty boring.
Sometimes we have to do the boring stuff, too.
Annette made a face as Whitney went back to her desk.
No thanks, I'll leave those parts to you.
I get the feeling that posing for the catalog will be plenty of work, Whitney pointed out. Especially since the first thing you'll need to do is convince our art department that you're the right person for it.
You could... Whitney held up a hand. Go convince them yourself. That is, if you really want it bad enough.
Annette looked at her for a few seconds. You're in a really bad mood today.
What is it? Missing Kenneth?
Whitney sighed.
Just go talk to the art department.
When Annette left a few seconds later, Whitney turned back to the window.
Missing Kenneth?
Her cousin couldn't have been more wrong if she'd tried. Instead of thinking about Kenneth, Whitney's mind drifted back to that moment at the Rowe Chalet, comparing it with memories from 5 years back, so that instead of having to pull apart, she could see herself entice kissing. She could feel every movement of his mouth against hers.
Stop it, she ordered herself,
and opened a file at random, hoping that work, any work, would be enough to distract her from the images going around and around in her head. 10 minutes later, when she'd read the first page half a dozen times, Whitney knew it wasn't going to be that easy. Her every thought led back to Tice, from the observation that he probably didn't have to deal with this kind of paperwork, to the memory of how good he'd been with her brother down at the coffee shop. And, of course, every thought about Tice led back to that moment at the chalet when he had nearly kissed her, and when she had nearly kissed him right back.
Stop it, she ordered her imagination. You're getting married to Kenneth. This isn't fair to him.
Kenneth didn't deserve this. She should be fantasizing about him, not Tice. She should be thinking about Kenneth every minute he was away, and looking forward to the moment he got back, not dreaming of someone else who made her heart race every time she thought about him. Kenneth didn't make her heart race like that. But so what? This thing with Tice, it wasn't real. It couldn't be real. Whitney closed the file and sighed. Kenneth was a great guy. He was handsome, kind, hard-working. He'd make a good husband. But had he ever actually made her feel the way Tice did, every time he looked at her? Like there were goosebumps rising on her skin with every glance, every touch. And had she ever imagined forever with him the way she couldn't help doing with Tice? Whitney knew the answers to each of the questions, had known them for most of the past week, actually. It was why she'd kept away from the Rowe Chalet. Not only because she was far too tempted to fall into Tice's arms, but because just looking at him made the truth of her feelings for Kenneth far too obvious. Whitney took a deep breath and forced herself to say it aloud.
I don't love Kenneth.
There, she'd said it. It hadn't been nearly as hard as she'd worried it would be. She said it again, with more certainty this time.
I don't love Kenneth.
He would, as she'd just pointed out to herself, make someone a great husband. Just not her. Oh, God. Was she actually saying that she couldn't marry him? She immediately imagined the reactions of everyone around her. Her parents would think she was insane for breaking up with such a great guy. Aunt Marge would be upset at the thought of another wedding at the Rowe Chalet collapsing. Her family and friends all loved Kenneth and thought he was perfect for her. They'd said it so many times. It was, she was starting to suspect, the reason that she'd agreed to wear his engagement ring. With everyone around her commenting on what a great couple they were, it had seemed so natural to believe it herself without giving it much thought. It was, she suddenly understood, a terrible reason to marry someone.
Don't just sit there, she said aloud.
No matter how difficult it would be to see things through to where they needed to be, it was time to finally be brave.
Do it.
Dialing Kenneth's number by heart, she was glad when he picked up after 3 rings.
Hello?
The voice on the end of the line sounded sleepy, and she belatedly realized she must have woken him up just after he'd gone to bed.
Whitney, is that you?
Hi, Kenneth. She realized they sounded like two old friends rather than two people desperately in love who were planning on spending the rest of their lives together. Just as Tice had said.
"What's wrong?" Kenneth asked.
Stalling for a moment to try to get her equilibrium back, she asked,
"How do you know that something's wrong?"
"You wouldn't have phoned me at this time of night otherwise."
He didn't point out that Whitney hadn't exactly been calling every day to say how much she missed him or to catch up on their time apart. An entire week could go by between their conversations, or more.
"Is there a problem with the contracts I sent over?"
he asked, sounding much more awake now. "No, it's not that." She hated stalling, but Kenneth was a good guy. She didn't want to hurt him any more than she needed to.
"It's about the wedding."
"Actually, I've been meaning to talk to you about the wedding, too. I've just been putting it off, I guess."
She heard him take a deep breath before saying,
"You're a wonderful person, Whitney. You're smart, you're beautiful, you're funny, and you've been one of my closest friends as long as I can remember. But
I don't want to marry you," Whitney said.
There was a pause, and then Whitney could hear Kenneth's sigh of relief across the phone line.
"You have no idea how relieved that makes me feel."
"Actually, I think I have a pretty good idea," Whitney pointed out,
shocked that they were actually laughing together over this strange conversation. After a few minutes of reassuring each other that they were still going to be good friends, he asked,
"Would you like me to take care of telling people that the engagement is off?"
Even in the aftermath of their broken engagement, she couldn't ask for a better friend, one she only felt the warmth of friendship for, rather than the white-hot passion of true love. "How about if you tell your relatives and I'll handle mine? Just try not to make me sound utterly cold-hearted when you do it, okay?" she teased.
"That won't be easy," Kenneth said in a tone that was mock-serious. "I mean, you did call me up at midnight to break off our engagement."
They both laughed again. "I'm so glad we're still friends," Whitney told her ex-fiancé.
"Me too," Kenneth said. "And now that I don't have to rush back for the wedding, I may extend my time in China. I'll see you in a few months, Whitney. I'm glad you called."
As she put the phone down, she could hardly believe the way the last few minutes had gone. Turning around to stare out the window again, she waited a little while to let the whole marvelous mess of their breakup sink in. Chapter 8. Tice rolled into work on time, ready for the big debriefing that followed every wedding.
"Good morning, Tice."
Phoebe looked as beautiful as ever in her elegantly customized dress, with her dark hair tied back.
"Things are still going well with you and Patrick, I take it."
Phoebe's smile widened. Not well. Perfect. In the flirtatious way they'd always had between them, she teased,
"Why, are you jealous?"
He was, but not because he wanted Phoebe for himself. It was because he wanted what she had with Patrick for himself and Whitney. He forced a smile, determined to keep up the appearance of everything being the same as usual, as he said,
"Obviously."
Phoebe reached out to touch his arm.
"Is everything okay, Tice?"
"I'm fine," he said,
knowing it was a bad sign if he couldn't keep up the facade of happiness.
"Come on, Rose is going to start hollering for us soon."
"Actually, the last I saw her, Rose was busy staring at all the scuff marks on the dance floor and wondering if there's time to replace it." Phoebe stepped in front of him. "So you have plenty of time to tell me what's going on if you want to." Tice shook his head.
"Maybe some other time."
Even if he were the kind of guy to talk about his emotions, he couldn't tell anyone at the chalet about Whitney, not if he wanted to keep his job. They headed through to the main room where Rose was indeed staring at the floor, adding items to her inevitable post-wedding list. RJ was applying varnish to a small section of floor he must have stripped back to prove to Rose that fixing up the wedding venue's dance floor wasn't going to be a complete nightmare. Tice could practically see her blood pressure reducing as RJ worked. Anne was there, too, wearing a dress with fabric that shifted and changed as the light came in through the windows. Like so many of Anne's designs, it seemed to be so much more than the sum of its parts. Tice couldn't claim to be the world's biggest fashion expert, but right then, with Anne staring out into the sunlight, she looked like a fairy princess. "Hi, Tice. Hi, Phoebe." She hugged each of them. "It was a wonderful wedding, wasn't it? The swans were beautiful, the bride looked lovely, and having a special song done for the two of them was so romantic." Not wanting to talk about the song, he told her,
"The dress was lovely."
She beamed at him. "Thank you." Rose turned and saw that they were all gathered. "Why don't we get started? Let's do a quick recap of the Washburn wedding before we look at the upcoming events on the calendar." The five of them gathered around. They'd done this so many times that it was a comfortable ritual, more of a family than a bunch of co-workers. "Now, I want to start by thanking all of you for doing a great job, as always. The wedding went really well," Rose said. She checked something off on her list as she said it. Tice tried to look over her shoulder to see if she actually had "say the wedding went well" written down, but he couldn't quite see. It would be such a Rose thing to do. "The Washburns were very pleased. All that's left to take care of is returning the swans."
"I took them back this morning," RJ said.
"Thank you," Rose said with a warm smile. "I don't know what I'd do without you some days. There's still a bit of cleanup to do, and RJ, you were saying that it would take a few days to refinish the floor?"
"It shouldn't be a problem,"
the handyman said, though Tice wasn't so sure. It looked like a big job to him. RJ was obviously determined to get it done for Rose, though. He'd always been there for their boss. "I'm talking to Julie about the possibility of her and Andrew handling our catering on a long-term basis. Since the caterer I hired after Julie didn't work out, having to scout out a different company for each wedding is getting tricky." Rose paused to consult her list again before continuing. "The other news is that we've had our last Banning wedding here for a while."
"What?"
Everyone turned to stare at Tice's outburst. He gestured for Rose to continue. She frowned before saying, "Whitney Banning phoned me earlier to say that she was going to have to cancel hers." "She isn't going to a new venue, is she?" Anne asked. "No," Rose said. "The wedding is off completely. We will be returning most of the deposit she left with us as a gesture of goodwill. We don't actually have to do it, but I'd like to. So if you could all let me have a list of anything you've already spent in preparations, then..." "Tice, where are you going?"
"Sorry,"
Tice said, heading for the door as fast as he could.
"There's something I have to do."
"Tice!" He hurried out before Rose could say anything more. He didn't think she would fire him, but right then, he didn't care. Some things were simply more important than a job. He'd wasted far too much time already. He wasn't about to waste any more. After 5 years, another few minutes or hours shouldn't make any difference, but they felt like the most important minutes in the world. Amazingly, there was a spot to park outside the coffee shop. Tice took it, hopping out and checking the time. Yes, if he was very, very lucky. He was. A quick glance through the coffee shop window revealed Whitney standing at the counter, ordering her regular morning coffee. She looked radiant this morning, happier than he'd seen her at any point in the past few days. He strode up to her and looked deep into her beautiful, surprised eyes.
"You canceled your wedding."
4 simple words, but there was so much behind them. How much he'd hoped for this moment. How perfect she looked standing there. How he wanted her right then more than anything else in the world. Tice. If he couldn't express everything in words, he could at least show Whitney how he felt. So he cupped her face in his hands, and he kissed her the way he'd wanted to on the morning the swan escaped. The way he'd wanted to for every moment of the past 5 years. It could so easily have been disappointing. It could so easily have failed to live up to his memories of their previous kiss. Yet from the moment that his lips touched Whitney's, she kissed him back with pure, sweet passion. He continued to kiss her every bit as fiercely, as hungrily, wanting to relearn every last inch of her lips. But then, Whitney pulled back from the kiss, far too soon. Not just from the kiss, but from him, too. "No, Tice," she said, her eyes wide and shocked, her skin flushed. I can't." Tice moved forward to brush a hand down across her cheek.
"You canceled the wedding. You're free to do whatever you want now, Whitney."
She took hold of his hand, moving it away from her skin. "Tice, I can't. I just can't." For the first time since he'd spotted her through the window, Whitney didn't look happy. She took another step away from him. This time, Tice didn't close the distance. The last thing he wanted was to upset her.
"Why not?" he asked. "And don't try telling me that you aren't attracted to me, because you know I won't believe it. Not after a kiss like that."
"The kiss was good," Whitney admitted in a soft voice that only he could hear, looking slightly embarrassed as she said it, as if she wasn't sure that she should quite admit how good it had been. "The kiss was great, but it isn't that simple."
"It's exactly that simple," Tice countered. "What do you want, Whitney? Just say it, and whatever it is, we'll make it happen. Together."
But the look in her eyes had him asking,
"I am what you want, aren't I?"
"I don't know what I want right now, Tice," Whitney said. "I know how good I feel every time I'm around you, but I'm not ready to jump headfirst into a relationship the day after breaking things off with Kenneth. I haven't even told my family yet. I need time to work out, for once, exactly what it is that I want." Whitney turned toward the door. "I need to go now, Tice. I have to get back to work." It was an excuse, and they both knew it. Tice wanted to reach out and stop her, wanted to kiss her again, so that she saw how great they could be. His hands clenched with the effort of not doing it, but he didn't reach for her to pull her against him. Because he loved her. And right then, it looked as though loving her meant letting her walk away again. Chapter 9. Tice played a scale on his guitar, bent the top note, and slid down the neck to repeat the riff. Milo blinked up at him from where he was lying beside the amplifier in the living room, one ear up, the other flopping to the side.
"Yes, I know," Tice said. "It's not really a song, but it's better than nothing, isn't it?"
He went into a quick legato sequence, and Milo put his head under his paws. His dog had a point. Tice had started off well, but now his guitar playing had descended into aimless noodling, just the same tired licks coming from his fingers, with no input from either his brain or his heart. He'd thought there was a glimmer of melody there, but he'd gone after it too quickly, and the result was a mess. Tice forced himself to rein it in and settle into a simple four-bar sequence. It was only when he'd been through it a couple of times that he realized he'd unconsciously gone back to the song he'd started to write all those years ago.
"I can't give up on Whitney, Milo."
The dog looked up from under his paws, looking hopeful at the sound of her name. Tice reached down to ruffle the dog's fur.
"I want to see her even more than you do, if you can believe it. But she wants space, and I have to respect that. I just have to hope that if I give her a little time, she'll come around to seeing how good we'd be together."
Milo barked as Tice started rooting through a stack of sheet music. Waiting was the right thing to do, even if it was hard. But he did need something to take his mind off thoughts of Whitney. He'd hoped working on the musical arrangements for the Rose Chalet's next wedding would help with that for a while. Unfortunately, there wasn't much to do. Another wedding spent directing the same parts for the same musicians. He must have worked at least 100 weddings with the string quartet over the years. The only difference in the routine was that they'd acquired a new viola player recently. The previous one had just taken a position with the San Francisco Philharmonic. Tice couldn't blame him. Moving on to bigger and better things is what musicians did. Most of them, anyway. Tice could still remember what it had been like in the early days. The bands he'd been in had broken up and reformed, swapped drummers, and fought over bass players, splintered and reformed under a dozen different names. Being so passionate about music made every band a strange and fragile thing. Perfect one night, then gone the next, always reaching for that special blend of ability and chemistry. Chemistry? It was more like alchemy with some of the bands he'd been in. But occasionally, just occasionally, the results were too good to ignore. Just like the way he and Whitney were together. Pure heat, perfect chemistry, and gravity that pulled them together every single time they were near to one another. What would that younger version of himself think of Tice's life now? Working the same wedding gig for years, occasionally guesting with another band to fill in for one of their players. He'd probably think this mature Tice was nuts. But then, he'd never cared about financial security when he was younger. He'd still been convinced that he could write songs, too. Tice turned his focus back to his guitar again, working to find the faint melody playing in the back of his mind. If he could only get it out through his fingers and onto the strings. A beautiful picture of Whitney smiling, her cheeks flushed, her eyes bright and intelligent, swam into his mind again, making him pause. He hated having to work so patiently around the edges of their relationship, when what he really wanted was to dive straight into the heart of their feelings for each other. But he'd tried that before, had tried to force everything in place, and where had it gotten him? No songs, and no girl. Maybe, he started to think, it would be better in the end if he didn't try to force it, and just let every note play out as the one that was meant to be there. Tice slid his guitar onto the stand and reached for Milo's leash. How about if I take you for a walk? It has to be better than sitting around here. The dog yapped his approval, and they'd almost made it to the door when Tice's phone went off. Hi, Tice. This is Sebastian, Whitney's brother. I found your number online. I hope it's okay that I'm calling. Hi, Sebastian. Praying Whitney wasn't in trouble, Tice asked, What can I do for you? Her brother was silent for a long moment, too long for Tice's peace of mind, before the teenager said, It's kind of embarrassing. Relief flooded through Tice. It didn't sound as if it had anything to do with Whitney. Sure, no problem. I've been in some pretty embarrassing situations. What's up? Well, I've got this talent show coming up at school, and the thing is... He paused before saying in a rush, I've never actually been on stage before. Tice could still remember the first time he went on stage. He'd been so nervous, the guitar had shaken in his hands, as if there was an earthquake rolling through the theater. Been there, too, he told Whitney's brother. How can I help out? Whitney said that the band you were in was really good, Sebastian said. Maybe you could give me some tips? I really don't want to mess this up, not with everyone watching. Tice thought for a minute. It would be easy to give Sebastian a few basic suggestions over the phone, but that didn't feel like enough. After all, this was Whitney's brother. Besides, it was good to see at least one member of the Banning family going after their dreams. We can do better than that,
he said. You've been to the Rose Chalet for one of Marge's weddings.
Sure, 3 times.
Meet me over there, and bring your guitar.
Tice grabbed his guitar. On impulse, he chose his beat-up one, rather than the one he usually used for work. Milo looked up at him, then back down at the leash.
Sorry about your walk, Tice said. Don't worry, though. You're coming, too.
Once he had loaded up his gear, he drove over to the chalet with Milo. The little dog didn't usually come with him to work, even though Rose clearly adored him. There was usually enough chaos on site without adding an excited dog underfoot. The chalet was closed and empty tonight, but Tice had a key for late-night rehearsals with the wedding bands. Whitney's younger brother was trying to look casual as he stood by the chalet's front door with his guitar case in hand, because obviously, looking excited about things wasn't cool. Still, Tice could see the nerves.
Hi, Sebastian. Come on inside.
I know you're probably too busy to hang out for too long, the kid began.
Tice shook his head and said,
I'm always up for jamming with another musician.
Thanks.
Sebastian crouched to stroke Milo's head, and the dog gave his hand a big slobbery slurp.
Yuck. It's the first rule of show business, Tice said with a smile. Never work with animals.
He ignored Milo's affronted look.
Tonight is all about getting experience playing on stage when there's no one around, so you don't have to worry about the simple things.
I'm not worried.
Sure you're not, Tice said as he unlocked the door. I once had a bass player who was so blinded by the glare from the lights that he walked off the front of the stage.
He laughed.
His playing didn't get a whole lot worse, to be honest.
Sebastian was laughing as they went through to the main hall, carefully keeping off the floor RJ had just revarnished.
It's important to make sure that everything is working before you start, Tice said as they set up the amplifiers. I've had gigs where we were too rushed to soundcheck, and the gear broke down just as we went on stage.
Sebastian nodded, obviously taking it all in. He pointed to Tice's instrument.
That's a cool guitar.
Tice slipped the battered and heavily customized old Telecaster over his neck.
It's all I could afford to put together back when I was gigging. I don't play it much these days.
Why not?
It's not the kind of guitar people expect when they come for a wedding. It wouldn't look right.
I bet you've been through a lot with that guitar, Sebastian pointed out. And if it's right for you, why use something else?
Tice shrugged and plugged the old thing in. He had to admit, it sounded a lot sweeter than he remembered. Turning his focus back to Sebastian's show, he said,
The best thing you can do for yourself and your audience is just to enjoy the show you're putting on. The people in the crowd want you to succeed because they want to be entertained. If you look like you're having fun, it's easier for them to have fun. Go ahead, plug in and play. Pretend you're out on your school stage and everyone you want to play for is in the audience.
Sebastian started to play, and although the first few bars were tentative and shaky, he quickly relaxed. Tice was glad to see that the teenager had talent. He quickly fell into providing the rhythm parts, stopping Sebastian here and there to give advice.
Don't be too focused on making sure your technique is perfect, he suggested at one point. Impressing people is fine, but what they'll remember are the songs that move them.
How do I do that?
Sebastian asked.
Back when I was writing songs, it was always about tapping into emotion. If I could pin down what I wanted to get across and really open up a part of myself, there was always a much better chance of connecting with the audience. Not, he felt compelled to add, that I've written anything in a long time.
Which then brought him to asking,
How's Whitney doing?
Good,
Sebastian said, as he bent back over his guitar. Almost as a second thought, he said,
Even though she canceled her wedding.
So,
Tice said slowly, knowing he shouldn't be mining her little brother for information, but unable to stop himself.
I guess she told everyone by now, huh?
Sebastian shook his head. No, she's weird about that stuff. Like Mom and Dad would ever be upset with her. Tice frowned. Why hadn't she told her parents? But he knew when it was time to back off, so he went back to showing Sebastian the basics of how to use the stage to get feedback through his guitar, and talked with him through the brief talent show set list.
Close with your best song.
Close with it? Sebastian was clearly surprised.
Shouldn't I start with it instead?
Tice shook his head.
It's the one people will remember most.
Sebastian swallowed hard.
What if I still don't feel like I'm ready for this? Then we can keep playing, Tice said. But honestly, it's mostly just a question of attitude. Remember that you're doing this because you love it. Sure, you're going to be up on stage with people staring at you, but that's exactly where you want to be. It's just a part of doing what you really want.
Sebastian looked around the Rose Chalet.
So playing weddings here is what you really want?
No. The answer came so swift and so clear to Tice, he knew there was no hiding from the truth anymore. What he really wanted was to be able to write a song again. And he wanted Whitney, too. Chapter 10 The high school auditorium was packed by the time Whitney arrived. Fortunately, Sebastian had reserved a seat for her. Even if he hadn't, she would have found a spot close to the stage, because she was the only member of the family in town, and Sebastian needed to know his family supported his dreams. He might have spent the week pretending the talent show didn't matter, but Whitney knew he was nervous. Not as nervous as she'd been for most of the week, however, as she told her relatives about Kenneth, one by one. Her brother had been easy to tell, because Whitney knew he wasn't going to judge her. Annette had been easy, too. The hardest part was stopping her cousin from continuing to suggest other men to date to take her mind off the pain of losing Kenneth. It had taken a good quarter of an hour to persuade Annette that "we both decided to end it" was not code for Kenneth having run off with someone else. Her parents had been the hardest ones to tell. She'd put it off all week, expecting her mother to cry and her father to say how disappointed he was in her for letting a good man like Kenneth go. The last thing that Whitney had wanted was to hurt them. Despite her fears, her parents had actually been great. Once she'd finally managed to get the words out, her mother had hugged her. Her father had asked her if she was sure it was what she wanted, and when she'd said yes, he'd seemed almost relieved.
All we want is for you to be happy, honey, he'd said. I'm glad you realize this now, before you and Kenneth got married.
We've always liked him, her mother had added. But if the two of you don't have that spark, then you obviously aren't right for one another. I know one day you'll find someone who will make you truly happy. It had been surprisingly easy to tell them the truth, so much easier than Whitney had thought it would be. So easy that sitting there in the darkening auditorium, she found herself wondering if she couldn't tell her parents the rest of it, that she wasn't sure she wanted to spend her life running their company. Only the truth was that resigning as head of operations of the Banning Wellness Corporation would affect everything, and Whitney couldn't possibly forget the conversation she'd overheard 5 years ago.
I don't know what we're going to do now that Whitney has decided to go to veterinary college, Graham Banning said to his wife.
You aren't thinking of staying at the company, are you, Graham? Jen replied. You know what the doctor said about stress and your health.
I don't know what else I can do, Jen. Whitney's the only one I trust to take over. Could you imagine one of her cousins doing it?
We could recruit someone else to take your place. Someone who has been in the business for a while already. Your health isn't good enough to put in those long days anymore.
I won't have a stranger running the family business.
But if Whitney doesn't want to do it... Graham Banning's voice was resolved.
Then I have to keep going.
Had anything really changed since then, Whitney wondered, as the last few people came into the auditorium? No, it hadn't. After 30 years behind a desk, her father had been pale, too thin. He'd traveled too much and hadn't eaten right. As soon as she'd taken over, his health had improved. Now, when he traveled, it was for pleasure, and he was full of laughter whenever they were together. She loved knowing she'd been there for him the way he'd been there for her whole life. Her parents still wouldn't want a stranger running the business they had worked so hard to build up. So who did that leave? Sebastian in a few years, after he'd graduated from college? Whitney looked up at the stage and knew her brother's heart was in music, not running an international corporation. The reserved seat next to her was the only empty one in the room. Just as the lights went all the way down, a man sat beside her. Whitney couldn't help staring. Her pulse speeding up automatically, her breath coming fast. "Tice? What are you doing here?" Even in the dark auditorium, she could see he looked particularly good tonight, wearing a dark shirt and slacks. Whitney thought that she could see the muscles moving under his shirt as he sat, then chided herself for noticing.
"I came down to support Sebastian," he said. "After all the work he's put in over the past week, I wanted to be here."
All the work? Whitney stared at Tice for a moment or two, drinking him in, his nearness, his clean scent, the beautiful flash of his eyes as he stared back at her. She'd asked him for time, and he'd given it to her. But now she wished he hadn't. "You've been helping him?" "Shh!" a parent behind them hissed. "The show is starting." It was so hard to keep her hand on her own lap, rather than slipping it into his. Tice helping her brother was so sweet. She had to forcefully remind herself that she'd only just told her parents about Kenneth, and that she hadn't even begun to work out what she really wanted when it came to her future. All too aware of Tice sitting next to her, she kept her eyes carefully glued to the stage as groups of high school students started to perform. Whitney did her best to focus on the acts that came on one after the other, but it wasn't easy. The kids were quite talented, and she had to admit that the show was a lot more fun than she'd thought it might be. But when Tice's hand brushed against hers on the armrest, Whitney simply couldn't concentrate on what was going on up on the stage. She quickly refocused when Sebastian walked out onto the stage with his guitar, though. No, not walked. He strode. Her brother strutted as though he owned the auditorium, and when he began to play, every eye in the room was on him. He looked around the crowd as he played, seeming to connect with all of them at once. It wasn't quite like watching Tice perform, but it was close, closer than Whitney would have believed it could be. Tice had obviously put in a lot of work with her brother. Everyone in the audience seemed to think Sebastian was great too, judging by the way they applauded. She could hardly bring herself to stay in her seat for the rest of the show. She was so eager to find her brother and congratulate him. When the talent show ended, Tice and Whitney both headed to the front of the stage. She hugged her brother. "You were wonderful." Beside her, Tice nodded.
"You did great. I knew you would."
"After all that time on the stage at the Rose Chalet, it wasn't so bad," Sebastian said. "It was fun being up there with everyone looking at me. Thanks for coming."
"I wouldn't have missed it for the world," Whitney assured him.
"Me either," Tice said, reaching out to shake Sebastian's hand. "Listen, I thought I could take you out to celebrate. After all the hard work you've put in, you deserve it."
But Sebastian's eyes had already wandered over to his friends.
"A few of the guys from my class were talking about hanging out over at Connor's place, and I've kind of already said that I'll go.
Plus, Michelle from my math class is going.
You don't need to say anything else, Tice said, with a smile that seemed to Whitney to be just a fraction too wide. It obviously had Sebastian convinced, though.
Go hang out with your friends. We'll jam together another time.
See ya, Sebastian said, hurrying off to join a group of kids his age.
You're very sweet, Whitney said, finally letting herself reach out to put her hand on Tice's arm. He was so warm, so real, and so beautiful that she didn't know how much longer she was going to be able to stay away from him, or even why she should. Not just for offering to take Sebastian out to celebrate, but for helping him in the first place. She paused for a moment before adding, If you've got a celebration plan in mind, it seems like a shame to waste it. Maybe you and I could...
The words got stuck in her throat, all the things she wanted mixing with all the things she didn't think she could have.
Tice's eyes held hers.
What could we do, Whitney? Tell me.
She took a breath, or tried to, anyway. Being this close to Tice made things like breathing hard.
Maybe we could spend some time together tonight.
He grinned at her, obviously thrilled with her suggestion.
The place I had in mind is close enough to walk to.
Whitney loved walking beside him in the darkness, just the way they once had.
How are things going over at the chalet? I hope Rose isn't too upset that I canceled.
Honestly, she just wants people to be happy.
His grin turned lopsided as he teased, even if it means losing the steady stream of banding income.
Maybe someday, Whitney said.
Tice's smile fell away as he gave her another of those burning looks that melted her insides.
Maybe someday, he echoed in a low voice.
They ended up at a small Italian restaurant where he had a reservation. The place was nice without being too formal. Plus, it had great vegetarian food. Trust Tice to know all the best vegetarian places in the city. It wasn't a hugely romantic setting. In fact, Tice waved away the candle the waiter tried to bring to the table, obviously not wanting to make things uncomfortable for her. He really was sweet, Whitney thought, as she found herself laughing when he started to give her the details of a few strange weddings he'd helped put on at the Rose Chalet over the years.
They really wanted a horse up there on stage with you?
Tice nodded.
Unfortunately, it reared every time I played a loud chord. It ended up putting a hoof through one of my amps, and I had to finish the set on an acoustic guitar.
Whitney laughed again, and told him a couple of stories about the chaos of trying to run a business with half her family underfoot. Before Whitney knew it, they'd licked the plate of tiramisu clean, the check was paid, and he was pulling back her chair as they got up to leave. Walking back to their cars, it was so natural for Whitney to slip her hand into his. She stared up at the stars, admiring the beauty of the night sky, and when she looked back, Tice was staring down at her. She'd missed him so much this past week, just as she'd missed him for 5 years.
I'm glad you came to Sebastian's show tonight.
Tice lifted their linked hands to her face and gently ran his knuckles across her cheek.
I am too.
For a moment, she thought he was going to kiss her. She would have let him this time, but right then, a bird squawked loudly from a tree branch right above them. Whitney jumped back in surprise.
My cat Clementine would be beside herself trying to get up the tree to that bird.
With that, she started to tell Tice about her cat, about a fashion show her cousins had dragged her to, about anything that came to mind. He was so easy to talk to, so easy to be with. She could just be herself. Tice was a great listener, and all night they had talked and laughed as if the past 5 years hadn't been lost.
They talked so much, in fact, that they almost walked straight past the school parking lot where they'd left their cars.
"We could always just keep walking,"
Tice suggested, and his expression turned serious.
"Doesn't it feel like the night's only just started?"
Whitney could imagine spending the night walking hand in hand with Tice all too easily. Of course, she didn't have to imagine, because she could remember what it was like last time. It would be fun and magical, and it would end with a very sweet kiss before they went home again. It was the kind of thing great memories were made of. But sweet memories weren't enough. Not anymore. Not when Whitney wanted more. "I don't want to keep walking."
"You don't?"
Tice looked a little confused.
"But I thought..."
Whitney pressed herself tightly against him, feeling the strength of his muscles as she finally kissed him the way she'd been longing to kiss him all night long. "I'd rather go back to your place. We can still talk, but..."
"But you don't just want to talk."
Tice said it softly, almost cautiously, obviously giving her the chance to back out if she felt she needed to. Right then, though, backing out was the last thing Whitney wanted. "No," she agreed softly. "I don't just want to talk." And then she kissed him again, to show him just how much she meant it. Chapter 11. When Tice woke, Whitney was curled into him, her skin warm, her dark hair spilling out over the pillow. He loved being able to feel every tiny movement she made in her sleep, to hear every breath she took. He'd thought for so long about what this would be like, but last night with Whitney in his arms had been so much better than anything he could have ever imagined. They had been two halves of the same whole, and even when the pleasure had taken them both over, their connection had been so much more than physical. Amazingly, lying with her as early morning light streamed in through the bedroom window was almost better than making love to her. The truth was that whenever he'd pictured himself and Whitney together, it had always been this moment, holding her, with the morning sun streaming in through the window, and nowhere either one of them had to go. At the sound of barking from the next room, Tice winced. Well, almost nowhere to go. He gently slid his arms from around Whitney, careful not to wake her. She looked so peaceful sleeping in his bed, and so tempting. It was all Tice could do not to climb back into bed with her and wake her with a kiss. There would be time for that later, though. To laugh, to kiss, to dream, to talk, to share, and to love. Tice dressed as quietly as he could, then headed out into the living room, where Milo was waiting for him to take him for his morning walk.
"You really know how to kill a great mood, don't you?"
Milo's ears twitched, and Tice scratched between them.
"I'm kidding. This morning is perfect. Let's take you for your walk, so that I can get back to the woman I've waited for 5 years.
Milo followed along happily as Tice took him for a walk around the block. Tice thought about his plans to make Whitney breakfast in bed when they returned, then to wake her with a kiss. Maybe they'd stay beneath the sheets for the rest of the day together, or maybe they'd get up and just talk for hours, her hand in his, her beautiful face right there for him to memorize, feature by feature. The best part of it all was that it genuinely didn't matter to Tice what they did. He'd been with women who had been exciting in the bedroom, but with whom he'd had nothing in common outside of it. With Whitney, he could happily spend the day simply being near her. They could walk to her favorite coffee shop, then keep going after that, with no plans, just seeing where they ended up.
"Would you like that?" Tice asked Milo. "Would you like to go for a long walk with Whitney?"
Milo wagged his tail. It was settled then. Tice would still wake Whitney up, but they'd go out after breakfast, and then... Well, there were so many possibilities, so many ways they could spend the day together. So many ways they could spend the rest of their lives together. When Tice looked down again, Milo seemed to be shaking his furry head in warning.
I know, Tice said. I need to take things easy and not plan too far ahead. But this is finally it, little guy. Me and Whitney, the way it should have been all along.
Milo barked.
Okay, so we probably shouldn't push things too fast at first with her family, because Kenneth is fairly recent history. We can start off slow at first by dating, then deal with what comes next, one thing at a time. I mean, after last night.
Tice shook his head.
Actually, you aren't old enough to hear about that, even if I factor in your dog years.
He started walking back toward his apartment with Milo, following alongside.
She's the one. I'm sure of it. I've always been sure of it.
He'd known how he felt about Whitney from the moment he'd first met her. Wanting to get back to her, he sped up until Milo had to trot along beside him. Knowing Whitney was probably still asleep, Tice was extra quiet as he took out his keys and let himself in. Milo barked as Tice started to open the door, and Tice put a finger to his lips.
Shh, you don't want to wake Whitney.
Tice didn't finish his sentence, because it turned out that they didn't have to worry about waking Whitney after all. She was standing in his living room, fully dressed, with her bag over her shoulder.
Whitney?
Tice stepped inside, the door still open behind him.
You're leaving?
Milo ran forward, and even as Whitney bent to pet him, Tice could see the tension on her face. The beautiful features that had been so relaxed while she'd slept were tighter now.
I have to, Tice.
Last night?
Last night was wonderful, Whitney said, cutting him off in a soft voice.
But you're still leaving,
Tice said, unable to keep the bitterness from creeping in.
Again.
He'd been so certain that things were finally going right, yet here Whitney was, obviously ready to run away without looking back. Whitney reached up to touch his face, and just for a moment, Tice dared to look at her with hope. But then he saw the faint shimmer of a tear at the corner of her eye and knew. He was losing her. In the past few weeks, I have followed my heart on more things than in the whole of the rest of my life. Breaking up with Kenneth. Taking a chance on you.
This isn't about Kenneth,
Tice said with absolute certainty.
You're right, she said. But it isn't entirely about you either. Even though last night was wonderful and perfect, and you helped me see just how good things can be when I go after what I want.
He had to move a little bit closer.
So you do want me, at least.
Whitney wrapped her arms around his neck.
Of course I want you, she said, before kissing him, too briefly, as if she was kissing him goodbye.
But you're still leaving, aren't you?
Whitney unwound her arms from his neck.
Every time I've taken a chance recently, it has worked out so much better than I expected. I thought my family would be so upset with me when I broke up with Kenneth, but they were fine about it. I thought things couldn't possibly be as good as I remembered with you, but...
She didn't finish that thought, but from the look in her eyes, she didn't need to.
We could be good together, Whitney. We are good together.
Tice couldn't stand the thought of not being with her.
I thought you could see it, too.
Whitney nodded, and Tice could see the pain in her eyes even as she agreed with him.
I do see it, she whispered. Please, Tice, don't make this even harder for me.
Whitney took a breath.
I'm going to give veterinary school a try.
Veterinary school? For a moment, Tice had thought that there was a real problem.
But school wasn't a problem. Not at all.
UC Davis is one of the best vet schools in the country, isn't it? It's only an hour from here.
He spoke quickly as the picture became clearer and clearer to him.
We can find a place in the middle that will work for both of us. Or I'll commute to the chalet so you can be closer to school.
But she was shaking her head, and he could feel his skin start to go cold in the warm room, even as the sun streamed in over both of them. The school I've always dreamed of attending and graduating from is a combined ranch and veterinary college, she suddenly blurted. It's the perfect place for what I want to do, and when I called them, they told me they'll accept me again based on my records from when I applied before. She took a shaky breath before saying, It's in Colorado, Tice.
Colorado.
Tice repeated it flatly, the one word crushing his renewed hopes. He'd thought everything was finally going to work out, even if they each had to make a few sacrifices along the way. He'd thought that all meant something. Yet here Whitney was, planning to move 1,000 miles away. She stepped back, clenching her hands together. If I don't do this now, I'm afraid I never will. In that moment, Tice knew how easy it would be for him to stop her. A few words, and Whitney would give up on the whole crazy dream. A single kiss, and she'd be his. He could take her back to bed, and make her forget that she'd ever thought about running off to another state to go back to school.
You're right, he made himself say, each word tasting like dirt on his tongue. You should go. I know how much you've wanted this, and how much you'll love being a vet.
You aren't angry? What could he say to that? Of course he was angry. Angry that the world could keep giving him brief tastes of the woman he was in love with, only to snatch her away again. Angry at the part of him that still insisted he should stop her, even though he'd never forgive himself if he did.
You're finally going to live your dream.
Tice pulled her back into his arms and kissed her gently.
I'm happy for you, Whitney, and so proud of you for going after everything you want.
Her eyes shimmered with unshed tears, and instead of saying anything more, she kissed him one more time. It was a kiss full of deep emotion and boundless passion. Her tears fell down her cheeks as she moved from his arms. Tice made himself stay right where he was, as she headed for the door and closed it softly behind her without looking back. But he could see the way her shoulders shook, and he could taste his own tears now. Beside him, Milo whined and stared at the closed door.
This is Whitney's dream, Tice told him. She's spent so long putting everyone else first. I'm not ruining this for her.
He picked up his bright, shiny Rose Chalet guitar, trying to find solace there. But before he knew what he was doing, he threw it down hard enough that the neck broke away from the body of the instrument.
Damn it!
Milo cowered in the corner, and Tice realized it was the first time he'd ever frightened his dog. His chest clenched as he held out a hand, and Milo came over cautiously, obviously worried about what his owner might do.
It's all right, little guy, Tice said, petting him. I'm sorry about scaring you like that. I won't do it again, I promise.
Milo leaned into him, clearly using his warm, furry weight to try to be a comfort.
If I did go after her, what then? He said to the dog,
who had been there practically every second that he'd spent with Whitney.
We both keep working at things that aren't our dreams. We stay together for a while, then a year from now, or 20 years from now, we blame each other for getting in the way of those dreams. I don't ever want Whitney to feel that way about me.
He paused.
And I don't want to feel that way about her.
He knew he'd done the right thing, but shouldn't the right thing feel better than this? Better than feeling as if his heart had been torn out of his chest,
leaving a gaping hole that nothing could fill. He picked up his old, beaten-up guitar. Sebastian was right when he'd said it matched Tice more than his nicer one. He felt beaten and bruised, just like the guitar. But he'd once made beautiful music anyway. Milo stared up at him, a pleading look in his brown eyes.
"Don't worry. I'm not going to break this one."
Tice sat on his old armchair, cradling the instrument as gently as he'd held Whitney in his arms. Memories of being with her were fresh and bright and painful. He told Sebastian genuine emotion was the most important thing when it came to music. Lord knew he had more than enough feelings crashing around inside him. Determined in a way he couldn't ever remember being determined before, Tice put his fingers in place behind the frets and reached into himself. Deep. Farther than he'd reached before. This time, he wouldn't run from the pain that came with trying to do the right thing. Instead, he would make himself feel every moment of the joy of being with Whitney, and then the loss. 5 years of waiting for her rolled over him, into him, through him, like the waves of an unstoppable tsunami. Finally, when he wasn't sure that he could take any more, he began to play again. And this time, he kept playing. Chapter 12. Whitney looked out over the ranch as a herd of horses ran around one of the paddocks. She could easily pick out the ones with small injuries after working with them for 4 months. Had it really been that long already? It seemed like only yesterday that she'd told her parents she was leaving the corporation and San Francisco to attend veterinary school. And then she'd told Tice she wasn't staying in San Francisco, that she needed to take the biggest chance of her life. Leaving Tice had been the hardest thing she'd ever done. Looking back over the past few months, she could critically say that everything had gone well so far. Her grades were great, and she was currently top of her class. Her classmates were wonderful, too. They shared her passion for animals, which was so refreshing after working with the endlessly ambitious and business-focused people back in her old life. Only Tice had been a part of that old life, and she missed him terribly. Every minute of every day, he was in her head, in her heart. How she wished she could put her arms around him, kiss him, see him smile somewhere other than in her dreams. "Hey, Whitney." Rachel was a few years younger, with the tanned skin of a girl who had worked on a farm all her life. Joe, another student, was with her. "A few of us are going into town for a break. You want to come along?" Whitney smiled at the invitation, but shook her head. "Thanks, but I've got a lot of work to take care of." "I can't believe how hard you study," Rachel commented.
"It's obvious why your grades are so much better than ours," Joe said in his good-natured way.
"All those books can't possibly be good for you," Rachel joked. "Are you sure you won't come? Like the two of you need me in the way." Whitney watched as Rachel put an arm around Joe's waist. "You've been dating, what, 2 weeks? I don't think I've seen you apart in all that time." Her new friends smiled into each other's eyes. "When it's right, you know." "Have a great time in town," Whitney said, before heading back toward the cottage she was renting nearby, in a town so small that some days it barely seemed like a town at all. When she arrived home, she spotted a package sitting on her doormat and picked it up as she headed through the door. As soon as she walked inside, Clementine pushed up against her, demanding attention. Her cat seemed to like Colorado, and they were close enough to the ranch that Whitney often found Clementine sitting on a fence post, staring at the horses. She put the package down on the kitchen table while she made Clementine's dinner and set a pot of water on to boil for her pasta. The cat sniffed at the food in her dish before leaping up onto the kitchen table to circle the package. I doubt there's anything for you in there. Sebastian has already sent you a catnip mouse once.
The packages were a lifeline back to San Francisco. Her brother had a knack for finding things that were tiny reminders of home, whether it was a catnip toy in the shape of a cable car for Clementine, or the latest wellness product to roll off Banning Wellness Corporation's production line. They came with old-fashioned handwritten notes, too. Sebastian texted and emailed her, of course, but the notes always felt especially personal and thoughtful. He seemed to be determined to make sure that Whitney didn't miss out on any of the family gossip, and she was glad for it. She missed them almost as bad as she missed Tice. "I wonder what Annette is up to this time," she said to Clementine, as she sat at the table to open the package. As soon as Whitney had resigned, Kenneth had happily moved up to take over many of her responsibilities. But because he was still in China wrapping up the New Deal, he couldn't take care of everything. Her entire family had been shocked when her cousin had offered to do more to help out. Yet amazingly, it had worked out. Annette was surprisingly good at working out what people wanted. All those years of wheedling things out of Aunt Marge had made Annette an excellent negotiator. These skills were in sharp contrast to the odd story of how she had insisted on doing all the modeling for their current catalog herself, then had berated the photographer for taking bad pictures. In the end, they'd had to redo the photo shoot with professional models. But, on the whole, things were going really well for Banning. It was as if her cousin had been waiting for the opportunity to show what she could really do. It hadn't been easy for Whitney to be the responsible one all those years, but now she could see that it probably hadn't been much easier for Annette, with no one expecting anything of her except trouble. "You know," Whitney said to Clementine, "I think my cousin might have hidden depths." The cat stared back at her as if it was the most obvious thing in the world. "Yes, I know you always liked her. And yes, I know I'm putting off opening the package from home. It's called Savoring the Moment." Whitney finally ripped open the paper on the small package. Inside, there was a short note and a CD in a folded cardboard sleeve. When Whitney saw the name on the front, her hands started shaking. Tice. His name was typeset in large letters, with a picture of him in front and a band in the background. Her cat brushed up against the picture of him on the CD. "I know you wanted to meet him, but I needed the space. I needed to figure out my own life first, before bringing someone else into it. I couldn't keep in contact, and he understands that. I know he does." The cat settled against Whitney's chest as both of them stared at the CD sleeve. Finally, she noticed a very familiar face in the cover photo. "Sebastian?" Clementine purred at the name, while Whitney opened the CD sleeve and stared at the list of musicians in shock. It was Sebastian, and according to the notes, he'd played all the lead and rhythm guitars Tice hadn't handled himself. All those notes, all those emails and texts, and her brother hadn't said a single thing about it. Had he been worried about how she would react? Whitney grabbed the note, looking for an explanation.
"Hi, sis. I wanted this to be a surprise. Tice let me play on practically all of it, and he set up the tour so that I'm not going to miss school, so don't worry about that. We're launching on the 18th, and his boss is letting us use her place for the show. Wish you could be there, but I know you've still got a lot to do. So maybe you can play this at your house, and it will be like you're here with us. Gotta practice our rock star moves now. Sebastian."
Sitting on the table, Clementine pawed at the CD, and Whitney turned to tell her cat, "I'm here in Colorado because I want to be, remember? Things are perfect." Perfect. The perfect life, in the perfect little town, at the perfect vet school. She was doing exactly what she'd always wanted to do. What more could she ask? The water boiled over in the pot on the stove, and Whitney just barely managed to put down the note to take it off the heat before the hot water really made a mess. But she wasn't hungry anymore. She sat back at the kitchen table, knowing the hole inside her had nothing to do with needing something to eat. Perfect didn't feel like this. So alone, as if half of her heart was missing. Clementine mewed again. What else could I have done? She asked the cat. A veterinary degree takes years. I couldn't expect him to wait. The worst part was that he would have. Whitney knew that instinctively. If she'd asked him outright, Tice would have agreed to wait for her however long it took. That, or he'd have given up everything he had in San Francisco, including his friends and his job, just to chase after her. So she hadn't asked. Oh, how she wished she had. Whitney got up and grabbed her laptop, bringing it over to the table. She wasn't checking out flights because she actually intended to go to San Francisco. Really, she was just curious to see if she could make the trip to see Sebastian play at the Rose Chalet without missing too many classes at the ranch. A little research revealed that she could go to her morning class, take a mid-afternoon flight that would get her to the chalet in plenty of time for the show, and still make it back to Colorado the next day without missing too much. Clementine pushed her furry head over the top of the laptop. You are incredibly nosy, even for a cat. You know that, right? Whitney tapped in a few details, then looked up to see Clementine staring at her. No, of course I'm not actually booking it. I'm just, you know, seeing if I could, hypothetically speaking, to see if I could get back to see Sebastian. Her cat blinked at her, a knowing look in her feline eyes. What? Challenged Whitney. I said Sebastian. The online system had her log in so that she could see the finer details of booking the tickets, including whether there would be room for Clementine, since Whitney couldn't exactly just abandon her for a couple of days. Of course, she was going to get to the payment screen and cancel the whole thing. How could she justify a trip like this, right before finals at the end of the first semester? She had studying to do. Lots and lots of studying, just like the past few months. At last, the payment screen popped up, and she stared at it for several moments, not moving. She ought to close the page. The last thing she should ever do is hit the button to accept it. Clementine stepped straight onto the computer, either deciding that she'd had enough of Whitney's dithering, or simply being annoyed that Whitney had been staring at the computer when she could be staring at her. Clementine? Whitney hurried to pick Clementine off the laptop. What have you done? She demanded, though the answer to that was obvious. Her payment information had already been in the system, which meant the transaction had been accepted. She was booked for a flight to San Francisco. Whitney stared at her cat in what she hoped was a suitably stern way. All right, she said at last, as relief flooded over her at the knowledge that she'd see Tice again. It looks like we're going to San Francisco. But you're a very naughty cat. Whitney headed off into the bedroom, trying to remember where she'd left Clementine's carrier, while the cat yawned and started licking her paws in a spectacularly smug way. Chapter 13 Tice sat in his living room at the center of a tangle of wires and amps and microphones, his laptop in front of him. The whole scene looked like the command center of a spaceship. He cradled his guitar, settling into the comfortable spot on the edge of his chair, where he could play it without the armrests getting in the way. He hit the space bar to record, and started to lay down a rhythm guitar part over a simple beat. He had done this most mornings since Whitney had left, getting ideas down as quickly as they came, recording demo tracks to take to the Rose Chalet. There, he'd been regularly getting together after hours with old friends who formed his new band. They brought his songs to life.
After years of missing the joy of creating music, Tice wanted more of it. But it was about more than that. Music was helping to fill the hole in his heart that Whitney's absence had left. His cell phone rang, and as with every time it had buzzed over the past 4 months, he hoped it was Whitney, calling to tell him she missed him, calling to tell him she wished he was with her, maybe even calling to finally say, "I love you." When he saw it was Rose, he worked to push away his disappointment, and instead focused his attention on how great his boss had been about his return to songwriting. Rather than being angry with him for not putting the chalet at the center of his world, she was supporting him as a true friend. Not only by letting him use the chalet as a rehearsal space, but by letting him throw his album release party there as well. "Hi, Tice. I just wanted to go over the final arrangements for your show. Julie said that she's got the food taken care of. Phoebe will be running the invite list. RJ has reinforced the stage. And Anne said she's been working on your band members' looks. Is there anything else you need from me?" Tice grinned at the very sweet question from his brilliant and focused boss. He'd run the music at the Rose Chalet for so long that the whole place was set up exactly the way he wanted it. Still, he had to tease her with, "You do realize that most musicians would come up with totally outrageous demands at this point. As you well know, I will not be supplying you with groupies, television sets to throw out of windows, or bowls of M&Ms with the brown ones taken out." Her amusement came through loud and clear. "Seriously, Rose, everything's perfect. I really appreciate all you've done for me." "You've always been a great friend, Tice," she said simply. "To all of us." No matter where music took him, he knew he'd be friends with Rose and the rest of the chalet crew for life. "Actually, Tice, I have a favor to ask you."
"Don't worry," he teased. "I'm not going to set off fireworks from the stage."
"Definitely don't do that," she agreed with a laugh, before explaining, "I have another client hoping for a special song for his wedding. I tried suggesting an arrangement, because I know that's what you did with the last one, but..."
"Tell him yes."
"Yes? Just like that?" She was clearly surprised, but I thought,
"Things are different now. I don't think writing a song is going to be a problem for me anymore," he said with a smile.
When he slipped the phone back into his pocket, Milo ran over to him, ready for his morning walk. Tice took him out, walking over to the coffee shop the way he did every morning now, so regularly that the staff put out a water bowl just for Milo. Things were different now. After losing Whitney again, he'd tapped into such a deep well of emotion, one he refused to run from ever again, and the songs had been coming fast and furious for the past 4 months. He'd written so many songs that he'd even passed a few he couldn't use for himself onto acquaintances in the recording industry. Amazingly, his songwriting credit was already on a couple of minor indie hits. Tonight, there would almost certainly be a few of the more important music journalists in the area attending his launch party. The question was, would the one woman who mattered most of all be there? Milo tugged on his leash as they rounded the corner to the coffee shop, and Tice knew Sebastian must have arrived. Whitney's brother didn't meet them every morning, but when he did, he always played with the little dog. The teenager had filled out over the past couple of months and had become more confident. The last time they'd spoken, he'd been talking about a girl at school he liked, but he was worried because they ran with different crowds. Tice had advised him not to worry about their differences and to just ask her out and see if they clicked. After all, he and Whitney had seemed so different on the surface, but they'd been perfect together anyway.
"Hey, Sebastian, are you looking forward to the show?"
Whitney's brother nodded, crouching to pet Milo.
"It's going to be great."
"You aren't nervous?"
Tice asked with a smile.
"Of course not,"
Sebastian said right on cue.
"You?"
Tice dutifully shook his head. Then they both laughed.
"We are such bad liars."
Dying to know, he asked,
"Who do you have coming to the party?"
Well, there's my parents and Aunt Marge.
Tell her we're not playing anything from Gone with the Wind, Tice interrupted him.
I already did. Oh, and Michelle said she would come too.
This is the girl you were going to ask out? The one from your math class?
Sebastian nodded. She didn't seem as impressed by the whole guitar thing as I thought she'd be, but she said yes anyway.
That's good, Tice said.
I guess.
It means she's actually into you, not just excited that you're in a band. And trust me, sometimes having a little patience is the best way to go with things.
Or a lot of patience, in his case.
Oh, and I also sent a copy of the CD to Whitney, Sebastian said, with a careful look at Tice. But I doubt she'll be able to come all the way from Colorado.
Trying to take a cat on an airplane at short notice was anything but straightforward. As I'm sure you know, ma'am, Steve, the manager at the check-in desk, said, animals often get quite distressed in flight, and...
Does Clementine look distressed to you? Whitney said, cutting him off as she held up the carrier where her cat was currently fast asleep. She needed to get to San Francisco. She wasn't about to leave Clementine in the middle of an airport, and she would do whatever it took to get both of them on a plane in time.
Actually, Steve said, because we didn't receive notification that there would be an animal on board, the hold isn't pressurized, so...
So Clementine can't go down there unless you're expecting her to hold her breath for upward of 1,000 miles, Whitney said, in a voice that vibrated with her attempt at remaining patient. I have copies of the paperwork when I notified the airline I'd be traveling with a pet right here.
She fished out printouts of the relevant screenshots from inside her jacket. If running the family business had taught her one thing, it was to always keep copies of everything. She put the papers down in front of the check-in desk manager, who looked at them dismissively. I'm sorry, he said, sounding anything but sorry. But I will have to abide by what I see in our system, and there is definitely nothing here about a cat. Ordinarily, Whitney wouldn't have done what she was about to do, but she couldn't afford to miss this flight. She just couldn't. It wouldn't be fair to Sebastian.
Sure, a small voice in the back of her head said. He's the only person you're thinking about.
She took out her cell phone and scrolled through her contact list until she found the number for her secretary. Technically, Olivia was Annette's secretary now, and Whitney still got occasional emails from each of them complaining about the other, but she hoped that Olivia would still feel enough loyalty toward her to help her out. After all, aside from leaving her with her cousin, she thought she'd been a pretty good boss.
Olivia, hi, it's me. Sorry to call you up out of the blue like this. Are you at the office? Annette has you doing what? Look, sorry to interrupt, but could I ask a favor? We did business with a small airline a while back. I need the private number for Guy Jupp. You have it? That's great. Thanks.
Whitney punched in the number while watching Steve, the manager's face. He seemed to be caught between a mixture of disbelief, annoyance, and continued arrogance, secure in his position behind his desk.
Hi, Guy, Whitney said. This is Whitney Banning. I don't know if you remember me?
Of course I remember you. That deal we did with you on transport was one of the best things to happen to my business. I had a great time when you and Kenneth came over for dinner. How is he?
He's fine, Whitney assured him. I hate to do this, but I'm having a problem getting on one of your flights.
If it's full, it might be tricky.
It isn't full. I actually have a ticket. It's just that they won't let me take my cat, Clementine, on board, even though I have the paperwork confirming that it was okay.
She hadn't forgotten that when she and Kenneth had gone for dinner at Guy's house, there had been 3 large Persian cats sprawled all over the furniture.
Could you please hand me over to the representative you've been speaking with, Whitney?
She smiled as she took the phone from her ear, mostly because Steve, the manager, was still looking at her as if she was crazy.
It's for you.
Mr. Jupp.
The man's face paled considerably.
That's right, sir.
Steve looked down at the paper with Whitney's flight details.
Yes, I'm very sorry. I understand. Yes, of course, sir. Absolutely. He handed her phone back. I'm sorry for the misunderstanding, Ms. Banning. If you'd like to go through to the first-class departure lounge, we'll call you when your flight is ready to board. In the meantime, Mr. Jopp has instructed me that if you want anything, you only have to say the word.
Thank you, Steve.
She picked up Clementine and carried her over to the waiting area, just as another woman walked into the lounge, moving to sit next to her. The woman's stark white hair was elegantly cut, and the handbag she placed next to her was designer.
"Well done on handling the dictator at check-in," the newcomer said. She extended a hand. "I'm Yvette Markston."
Whitney knew that name, even if she'd never met the woman personally.
"Whitney Banning."
"I know who you are. You look just like Marge did at your age."
"You know my aunt?"
"We meet occasionally. Charity events, usually. She speaks very highly of you. So, tell me, what is so important that it has you pulling out the stops to get onto the plane?"
"My brother is playing in a band, and they're having the release party for their album. I haven't seen him for months, and I want to surprise him."
"Have you been doing business in Colorado?"
"No," Whitney said, slightly defensively.
"I'm not working for the Banning Wellness Corporation anymore. I've been training to be a veterinarian. Colorado has one of the best schools in the country for horses. And," she said, unable to stop the words from coming out, "this way there are no distractions, and no one..." She cut herself off. "I mean, nothing to keep me from following my dream."
"Ah, distractions." Yvette's lips curved into a small smile. "I used to have my fair share of distractions when I was a beautiful young girl like you." She raised an eyebrow and leaned closer.
"What's his name?"
"I'm not with anyone," Whitney said quickly.
"Too quickly."
"No?"
But it wasn't true. She and Tice hadn't made any promises to each other, but he was still there with her, in her heart. The same way he always had been, right from their first night together 5 years ago.
"I left him to find out what it was I really wanted," she finally admitted.
"And do you have an answer?"
"Sometimes I think I do," Whitney said in a soft voice. "But then I don't. All I know is that I miss him. Terribly."
The other woman patted her arm. "Just look at that aunt of yours. A brand new husband she adores, a thriving business. And still she has time for her friends and for the causes that she believes in. Do you think she feels she has to choose?" Yvette didn't wait for her answer. "There is little worse in life than regrets. If you know what you want, reach out for it. Fight for it, whether it's your family or your choice of career or love."
"And if I don't know what I want?" Whitney asked.
"Then work it out."
It was a no-nonsense answer, not meant to give offense. "Though I think you do know, or you wouldn't have put so much effort into getting on this plane, would you?"
Chapter 14. Setting up for the CD launch at the Rose Chalet felt like a family affair. Julie and Andrew came early with several large trays full of food. Phoebe put a dozen rock and roll inspired arrangements of flowers around the main room, then spent the rest of her time with Patrick, helping him decorate the main hall for the evening. What Tice wouldn't give to have Whitney there beside him. The flight was going well so far, no turbulence, and Clementine had behaved herself in her carrier. The cabin crew had gone out of their way to be courteous and friendly, so either they all liked cats, or news of what had happened at the check-in desk had spread quickly. Whitney didn't want to be the ex-executive who bullied people until she got what she wanted. Other people's feelings mattered. Except what she wanted mattered, too. And she'd forgotten that for so long. For too long. Tice heard the rumble of thunder as the storm clouds rolled in. It wasn't the best weather for a party, but they were all going to be indoors. Rose began to pull the shutters closed to keep the rain out, and RJ was there to help her,
the way he always was. Tice started to lend a hand, but RJ shook his head.
We've got this under control. All you should be thinking about right now is putting on a great show.
Rose's phone rang, and she put it to her ear.
Donovan?
Really, you can't?
Okay, I understand.
She frowned as she slipped the phone back into her pocket. It looks like Donovan won't be able to make it, Tice. Between an emergency client and the weather, well, you know how things can be for him. Yes, Tice knew exactly how things were with Rose's fiancé. In any case, Donovan wasn't the reason Tice was keeping his eyes trained on the door. Whitney looked at the sudden appearance of thick gray clouds out her window and held onto her armrest while the plane shook with turbulence.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. We will be approaching San Francisco shortly, but I regret to inform you that due to the severe weather conditions, we will have to wait a little longer than usual to land.
No!
Whitney didn't realize that she'd said it out loud, or quite how loud she'd said it, until one of the cabin crew rushed over to her.
It's all right, Miss Fanning, the young flight attendant said. It isn't anything serious. It might take a while longer than we were hoping, but we'll get there.
Whitney wanted to tell the woman that she couldn't wait, but she knew that wouldn't do any good. She was stuck in the sky until it was safe to land. She checked her watch. How long would it be before Tice's show started? Would she still make it? Tice tapped his foot to the beat while the band warmed up. Sebastian broke off from the two-bar vamp they were working through to adjust his amplifier for controlled feedback. Guitarists were guitarists, no matter how young they were. Anne moved up beside Tice, the many-layered fabric of her party dress seeming to float around her.
Isn't it wonderful that everyone is here for your big moment? Rose, RJ, Phoebe, Julie, Patrick, Andrew, me. It's just like one big happy Rose Chalet family.
But when she caught him looking at the entrance one more time, she gently asked,
"Is everyone you're waiting for here?"
Tice made himself smile at his friend.
"Thanks for coming tonight, Anne."
He headed for the stage to start the show, Milo beside him every step of the way, as if realizing his owner needed him close by. Whitney hurried through the terminal with Clementine mewing from within her carrier.
"I know," Whitney said, as she rushed out into the rain. "You hate getting wet, but it's for a good cause. For Tice. And for love."
Unfortunately, there was a huge crowd of people waiting for taxis. For a few seconds, Whitney waited along with them. But it didn't take her long to realize that if she remained the polite, good girl she'd always been, she would definitely miss the show. She pushed her way through, ignoring the occasional outraged shout as she ducked into any space that presented itself, and took full advantage of those moments when people heard Clementine complaining from the carrier. Moments later, she clambered into a taxi, just ahead of a businessman.
"Hey!"
he yelled as she closed the door on him. The cab driver scowled at her.
"What do you think you're doing, lady?"
"Sorry, but I'm in a hurry. Do you know where the Rose Chalet is?"
"The wedding place? Sure, I drive past it most days. But this isn't your cab, and..."
Whitney took out her purse. "I have $200 to give you if you can get me there now."
$200?
The driver looked at her in disbelief.
"Are you serious? That's a $15 fare, max."
"Completely serious. And I'd like you to drive as fast as you can without getting pulled over."
The cab driver smiled widely.
"Lady, I never get pulled over. You better buckle up and hold on tight to that cat."
Tice looked out over the crowd. He'd taken as long as he could with the sound check, but now that the Rose Chalet was full, he couldn't wait any longer. There were his friends, Sebastian's family, the girl Sebastian liked so much, the staff from the Rose Chalet, and strangers, too. Some were friends of friends, who had obviously been told about Tice and his songs,
and others were music journalists and bloggers who could make or break a new release. He stepped up to the microphone and was glad to feel the familiar joy of being on stage. He'd missed this. Tice knew, deep within himself, that while Whitney might not be at his big comeback show, he wasn't planning to give up on his dreams again. Not on his dream of being a songwriter. And not on his dream of being with her.
"I'd like to thank you all for coming here tonight," Tice said, then nodded to Al, the drummer, who counted them into the first song.
Whitney's cab driver was named Lyle. She knew that because he liked to talk as he drove, the speed of the words running neck and neck with the speed of the cab. Currently, he was talking very fast indeed.
"I had this one guy in the cab. He paid me just to go see the bridge, drive over it, and then turn around to go back to the airport. Then there was this other guy,"
Lyle threw the car into a tight turn,
"who paid me just to drive around for a whole afternoon, making stops, and I started to think he was a mafia hitman, but it turned out that he was a computer technician and..."
"Watch out for that red light!" Whitney gasped. But her driver kept going, making it through the junction an instant before traffic started flowing through it the other way. "Relax," he said, with a quick glance into the rearview mirror.
"It was barely red for a second. Besides, your cat doesn't seem to mind."
That was the strangest thing of all. Clementine was calmly sitting in her carrier, looking straight forward, as though she were actually enjoying Lyle's kamikaze driving style.
"So, what's with the rush? If you're going to the wedding place, does that mean you're going there to get married? Or maybe you're rushing to interrupt a wedding and win back the guy you love. It's something like that, isn't it?"
"Yes," she said, her hands in a white-knuckled grip on Clementine's carrier, as she realized the full truth of her feelings for Tice, and just how deep they ran. "It's something like that." The music flowed. Tice had seen this moment so many times in his mind's eye, but the reality was better. So much better. The band was tight. Sebastian was wailing on the guitar whenever he got a solo, and the applause for Tice's new songs grew louder and louder. Milo was sitting up on the stage, watching, but thankfully not making any doggy attempts to sing along. Tice bent to scratch his ears. Then he straightened and nodded to the band.
"Guys, give me the stage for this one, would you?"
Whitney dumped her wad of 20s into Lyle's hand, shoved open the taxi door, grabbed Clementine, and ran through the puddles to the door of the Rose Chalet. Inside, the lights were low, and for a moment her heart squeezed tight as she thought she'd missed the show. But then a single spotlight came up, highlighting Tice with his guitar.
"I'd like to play a new song for you, one even the rest of the band hasn't heard. Actually, it's not that new, since it's the last song I started working on before I hit a long dry spell with my songwriting. I didn't realize, until a little while ago, that was because I wasn't ready to say what I really needed to say."
He paused.
"I call this one Whitney."
And then he started to play. Chapter 15. The song was heartfelt and catchy and amazing. It was about a man who had lost the woman he loved, and who kept on losing her, thinking that he would get close to finding her, but never quite managing it. But he never gave up either, because no matter what happened in their lives, or if they were apart, he loved her then, loved her now, and would love her forever. He loved her. Whitney moved forward through the audience as Tice sang, listening to every word, and knowing with each one just how difficult it must have been for him to let her go to pursue her dreams. She reached the front row and set down Clementine's carrier just as Tice reached the end of the song. The lights were so bright, she knew he couldn't see her, until, finally, the room lights came up a little bit, and he looked at her, his eyes wide, as though he couldn't quite believe that she was there.
Even though he was in the middle of his show, Whitney couldn't wait any longer. She jumped up onto the stage, took Tice's face in her hands, and kissed him. She kissed him sweetly, lingeringly, wanting to savor the moment as much as she could, and loving the taste of his mouth against hers. "I love you too," she whispered. At least, it was meant to be a whisper. It was only when the assembled audience cheered that she realized the microphone was live. They'd all heard her. Once, that might have embarrassed Whitney, even shocked her. Right then, though, all she could think to do was to say it again. Stepping away from the microphone, she said, "I love you, and the song was beautiful, and I don't want to wait any longer. I want to be with you."
"But Colorado."
"I want Colorado, but I want you too. I'll do whatever I have to so I can be with you. Travel across the country, come to San Francisco on weekends."
"Or I could come to Colorado," Tice suggested, "if you'll let me."
By way of an answer, Whitney kissed him again.
"We should talk about this," Tice said. "I could end the show."
"Don't you dare," Whitney insisted. "I'll be right here, listening to my favorite singer, now and always."
"And possibly trying to catch your cat," Sebastian said from behind her. "I think she just got loose."
Whitney got down off the stage before the crowd got too restless about the interruption of the show, and was about to go after Clementine. But then Tice and his band started playing again, and a couple of nice-looking teenagers scooped up her cat and started spoiling her, which was a very good thing, since Whitney couldn't have moved away from the front of the stage for the world. The band played with so much energy, and while Whitney had thought Tice was amazing before, now every word he sang came straight from his heart. She danced until the music finally faded on the last song. When Tice finally jumped off the stage, she met him with another kiss. He kissed her back so thoroughly that it was all Whitney could do to keep from suggesting they should abandon the party to rush back to his place. His family and friends came up to tell him how great the music had been, and at the back of the room, she saw Sebastian kiss a girl about his age on the cheek. Whitney grinned, thinking that her brother's friend from school had obviously appreciated the performance too. And she was beyond thrilled when the journalists all assured Tice that their write-ups were going to be spectacular. One female journalist turned her attention to Whitney, while the others crowded around Tice. "It occurs to me that banning Eris in relationship with up-and-coming star makes a much bigger headline than local musician releases album," the woman said. "But I thought I'd check with you before I went with that one." Not that long ago, Whitney would have worried about what her family would say, or what it would do to the banning corporate reputation. Now she just laughed. She wanted the world to know about her and Tice, and she was so proud to be linked to him. "If it means more people will hear Tice's music, it sounds good to me." Whitney felt two sets of warm, familiar arms come around her, and belatedly realized that, of course, her parents had come to see Sebastian play. "He's not the reason I broke up with Kenneth," Whitney said quickly. "Although the truth is that I never should have agreed to marry Kenneth in the first place." Her mother smiled at her. "Tice seems like a great guy, honey."
"All we ever wanted was for you to be happy," her father said. "And we're so sorry we didn't realize you were putting your dreams on hold for us."
She hugged them back. "All of my dreams are coming true now." It was true, she thought, as Tice moved up beside her and she introduced him to her parents. She was finally learning how to put the pieces of a wonderful life together. A family she adored, work she thrived on, and a love she couldn't live without. After her parents left, Whitney and Tice walked back into the main hall holding hands. Most everyone had left, apart from the band and Clementine. Whitney's cat was sitting in the middle of the floor, washing herself sedately, while Milo padded his way across the floor, obviously intent on sneaking up on her.
The little dog kept low to the ground, before barking in a way that made it clear he wanted Clementine to run away so that he could chase her. Clementine just kept licking herself, barely even bothering to look at him. Milo crept closer, and Whitney started forward to interfere before Clementine ended up as the little dog's chew toy. Only just then, the cat whirled around and batted Milo with one paw, catching him squarely on the nose. The little dog sat sharply, almost falling over with the sheer shock of it. He whined and then lay down, looking up at Clementine as though not sure what to do next. For her part, Clementine looked smug. She moved to sit beside Milo and pushed up against him until he gave up the patch of floor he was on. Then she lay down with her head resting on the dog, using him as a pillow while she curled up and closed her eyes.
"I think we've worked out how that relationship is going to go," Tice said, wrapping his arms around Whitney, so that his head rested on the top of her head. "Poor Milo. He never stood a chance."
"I never did either," she murmured, turning in his arms to brush her lips against his. She pulled back to look up at the man she loved. "So, now that the animals are settled, have we worked out how our relationship is going to go?"
"We will," Tice promised. "I was thinking we could start with me moving to Colorado to be with you while you go to school."
"You'd do that? Just uproot and leave? I thought you loved it here."
"I love you more, and I can make music anywhere."
He smiled.
"At least, anywhere you are. We could look for a nice little house with plenty of space for animals out back, and close enough to the veterinary practice you're going to set up."
"Have you been reading my mind?" Tice put his hands in hers.
"I know you, sweetheart, and I want you to have your dreams. All of them."
She wrapped her arms around him. "I have one of them right here."
"We both do," Tice assured her, pulling her close.
But then he was the one pulling back to stare down into her eyes.
"Do you think the Rose Chalet might see another Banning wedding after all?"
Whitney pressed tightly to him, loving the sensation of finally being so close when they'd been apart for so long. "I do," she said softly, as a prediction of future vows. "After all," she said with a smile, "I never did get that dream wedding."
"You can have any dream you want, Whitney," Tice said, "just as long as it doesn't involve Gone with the Wind."
Whitney laughed. "I think we can leave that one to Aunt Marge." And then Whitney kissed Tice, standing right in the spot where so many brides had kissed their grooms before. Epilogue. As Anne Farley headed off for home on foot after the concert, she couldn't help smiling at how sweet and romantic Tice and Whitney were together. They were clearly perfect for one another, and Anne was so glad they'd finally worked everything out. She hoped their relationship would be as good as her parents had been. Her mother and father had become childhood sweethearts after her father had literally bumped into her mother in the high school corridor, helping her to pick up her books and asking her out on a date all at once. From there, they'd hardly ever been apart. They'd attended the same college and married as soon as they'd graduated. He'd turned down a highly paid job opportunity so that he could be near her, and she'd later supported him while he wrote his novels. Even after they died in a tragic accident, their love had shone through. The emergency personnel had found their car at the bottom of a ravine, her parents holding hands, as though they'd reached out for one last touch of each other's hands in their final moment. One day, Anne hoped to find a love that pure and perfect with a man who would love her every bit as much as her father had loved her mother. Anne liked to think that she took after them, though obviously the wedding dresses she designed were in a different medium from her mother's sculptures and her father's novels. It was why she did so much work with Rose and the brides at the chalet. Rose was her friend, and it was a wonderful opportunity to make beautiful gowns for brides who really appreciated them. Ultimately, though,
there was nothing better in the world than to watch the love on the bride's and groom's faces when they were both saying, "I do." Anne was only a couple of blocks from home when Tice's van pulled up next to the curb.
"Why don't you hop in so that Whitney and I can give you a ride the rest of the way?"
"Thanks," she replied, "but it's a lovely night." "Lovely," Whitney said, both Milo and Clementine sitting on her lap looking out at Anne. "It's raining, and your dress is getting wet." "Rain is lovely," Anne replied. True, her dress was getting fairly wet, but she'd only made it for this party, and would likely alter it completely before she wore it again. She smiled at both of them. "You gave a great show tonight, Tice. I'm so glad you were able to make it, Whitney." She waved them away. "Have a great night." Her house had once belonged to her parents, but was now hers alone. It was a large craftsman-style home, not too far from the Rose Chalet. It had been built with a family in mind. She was surprised to see a black SUV parked outside her house, a man standing in front of it in the rain. He was wearing dark jeans and a dark jacket. Even though he was staring at her without the barest hint of a smile, Anne couldn't help but think that he was very good-looking, with slightly long brown hair and piercing blue eyes that were hard to ignore even through the rain. Assuming the shiver that went through her was simply a reaction to her cool, wet clothes pressing against her skin, Anne smiled over at him as she walked up her front steps to get out of the rain. "Hello," she called out. "Are you looking for someone?"
"Are you Anne Farley?"
When she nodded, he moved toward her. When he was under the cover on the porch, he reached into his black jacket and held out an envelope. Surprised, Anne took it and immediately reached inside to see what it was. Her eyes widened slightly as she read the document. "You've made a mistake," she said, holding out the envelope to the man in front of her. "You have the wrong person."
"Your parents were Edward and Chloe Farley?"
Anne nodded. "Yes." The man shook his head confidently.
"Then I'm afraid there hasn't been any mistake. I'm here to serve you with legal papers relating to your father's other daughter."
This has been The Wedding Song, Four Weddings and a Fiasco, Book 3, written by Lucy Kevin, narrated by Eva Kaminsky. Copyright 2011 to 2013 by Oak Press, LLC. Production copyright 2014 by Oak Press, LLC.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.